Hey, this is Jake Gibb. You're in the net live.
This is Taiba Hanif Park, and you are in the net live.
Aloha, this is Mike Lambert, and you are in the net live.
Loy Ball, and you're on the net live.
Rhyme Alarm, and you're in the net live.
Hey, this is Heather Ballin, and you're live in the net. Nope, that was totally wrong.
Hey, this is Karch Kira, and you're in the net live with Willie and Barney.
It's Monday. Another beautiful day. It's the Net Live. Geets, we're sitting here in the sun in the home court. Skylights are working.
Skylights are obviously working. I can't even see my computer screen. You had Loy Ball on last week.
We did. You were just commenting. You've never had Loy Ball on the show.
I was kind of bumped.
And you missed it. You hung up on us, though. That's why.
Loy and I go way back. IPFW.
Yeah.
Northridge, the battles at Ball State.
Was it a battle or did you just crush him?
No, they were up 2-0 and we won in 5.
Oh, we'd like to have had him on here to talk about
that. We raged after.
Nice.
Which was what you did.
That's what you did with Loy.
Back in men's.
Loy's better at that than he is at volleyball, which gives you some idea how good he is at partying. First of November, the Halloween hangover. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Net Live, live from the home court. Myself and Chris Geeter-McGee hosting today's show. We're hoping to hear from Reed Pretty, although we don't know. He is in a Russian restaurant, Sergei Tatukin's restaurant, somewhere in Moscow.
The only guy I know right now that's in a Russian restaurant in Moscow.
There could be others.
No.
You don't know anybody else? Okay.
Halloween's crazy in this town, by the way.
It's fun. It's so fun. Did you get the kid dressed up? Would Millie go as George?
She went as a princess and then got naked and then switched into her fancy Nancy outfit. and the walk streets in Manhattan Beach between 4th and 9th are insane. And I mean, literally, we passed out, I think, 1,100 pieces of candy. Well, my old neighbors did. I didn't touch it. But it's insane. They come in waves from cities. They bus them in, literally. And it's overwhelming. Millie did trick-or-treat for the first time, so it was fun. We taught her how to say it. I mean, she was great. She was trick-or-treat. Thank you. Storming the streets. It was awesome.
I think it's awesome just to have so many people in the community out.
Yeah.
We went over with friends just up the neighborhood here, and we were walking around. You see 10 or 12 people you know from football or basketball or whatever else. It's just a really neat thing community-wise to connect with everybody around you. Hey, we got a great show planned for you here today. 1st of November, and we are talking women's national team. Of course, the roster finally got announced. And the tournament actually has started. They announced the roster, I think, the day before the tournament. So imagine that. Do you think they just named them right then? Flew over one day before?
And just said, out of a hat, bang.
Here we go. So we'll talk about that. We've got a recap of results and look at the upcoming matches. Tournament underway. Head coach of North Dakota State's team was recently resigned under allegations of player verbal abuse. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, some of the issues surrounding coaching today in the NCAA. We're going to play a little game of up and down. It's something Geeter and I are going to do here. We'll go through the 1988 men's gold medal team and tell you if we think they'd compete for a spot or if they'd be out, if they'd be cut. We're going to go through the entire squad and we're going to relate it and see, would they start today?
Probably going to lose some friends.
Maybe. At least
that's
get some people angry. And then our guest today, we've got Aaron Brock coming on, head trainer for the United States national teams. Aaron was the trainer for the men's team, and then as soon as they moved and then the women joined out here in Anaheim, he became the director of athletic training for USA Volleyball. He's in charge of both teams. We're going to talk to him about getting a team through a tournament like World Championships. The women right now in the midst of playing 5 matches in 6 days, that's a challenge for the medical staff. We're going to talk to him about that. He's just back from World Championships with the men, and he can relate the experience that's going on now in Japan.
And women that play nowadays, whether it's college or beyond or club, they play all year round. It used to not be that way. I mean, club, literally, Barney, club volleyball starts now. There's clinics on the weekends. High school's going on. We start December. The second their season ends, goes all the way till JOs is what, July 3rd? And then you're in camps and you're back at it again and you're starting in August for double days.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, and I'm sure we'll get into it again in the middle of junior season, that the schedule has crept.
Yeah.
Everybody's creeping one direction towards the other, and at this point it is a wall-to-wall schedule for kids.
So to keep these players healthy, especially at that level for world championships, that's a heavy task.
Yeah, it's the same thing for these professional players. Go to the national team, to your professional club, and back again. No rest for them either, and you're talking about a lot higher level, more hours of training, and more pressure on the body, obviously, as the bodies are bigger.
If you would have been able to rest, imagine what kind of player you would have been.
I might still be playing. Maybe.
Instead, you're coaching
said I'm here doing the net live, and that's okay. Eagles. That's all right, yeah. A little week off for the Eagles professionally and personally. Had a week off, so nothing to report there. Although I hear that our team that we're going to match up with next week in the first round of playoffs, or pardon me, 2 weeks, is forfeiting already.
It's great.
They've given up. They went 0-8. They only scored in two of those games, and they're giving up. They don't want to play us.
I went to a Pop Warner Championship game on Saturday for 10-year-olds. The Redondo Seahawks beat Palos Verdes. My broadcast partner, John Jackson, that I do football with, his son's the quarterback. He's the coach. It was insane. I mean, they are so into it, and it was awesome to see. I brought Millie. We sat right there. PV, 33 cheerleaders for their 10-year-old squad.
Nice.
Seahawks, two. But the Seahawks won 38-8.
Nice. Yeah, I've seen that Pop Warner League. It's a good team. It's a lot of fun.
The reason why I say it is it's next level for you, buddy. I mean, it's
we may get there. We'll see. My guys are going to play the speed game for a while. You know, the Barnett family not built for hitting people quite so early. Yep. Couldn't get over 200 pounds until I was like 22. So my kids may have a little trouble putting on weight dealing with kids from Gardena who have mustaches at the age of 7. So, Dan Madden, we got some sad news about one of the members of the family here at the Net Live. Dan Madden is down.
We lost him.
He's down. He blew his Achilles this past week. I got the news early in the week. Texted him, is it true? Called me back, yes. I am hurt.
And the amazing thing, he did not do it playing beach volleyball, which is his only love. He actually did it playing hoops.
This makes him hate the hard court even more.
Yeah, which he's not good at, and he hates it. He hates every sport but beach volleyball.
Yeah, so he was in there. He's probably sucking. Probably wasn't playing very well. Probably like 0-6, black hole, wouldn't pass to anybody. And
one
he blew
assist, three turnovers in a half-court game. And he blew it out. And I do feel bad, all joking aside. I did see his lady and his future father-in-law last night. I was like, where's Dan? But then she kind of walked away, and I figured Dan was just leaking it, not coming into my house.
No, he's trashed. And according to his video, I actually came across one of his videos this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, Danny kind of does not know the meaning of the word quit, was the quote. So, this will be tested.
Yeah.
We'll find out.
I mean, he quit the show.
True. He did quit for a job, though.
Yeah.
So I didn't fault him too much there, but now we'll see if he can actually bring himself back. He said he's actually looking forward to the rehab. I didn't quite understand that. I think he may have been delirious on pain medication. He said it doesn't hurt, and I'm looking forward to the rehab.
I wonder if that means he can take a couple weeks to come back to the show.
No, he's got to be in Lindsay's office. They're going to wheel him right up to West LA.
If he does come back, we're going to have Sullivan call in for sure.
Definitely.
That'd be great. A one-on-one interview. Sully, Dan Madden.
Now, Geeter, I don't know if you heard last week, we did an interview with Jason Olive from Volleyball Magazine.
I was
talking
on,
about some of the targeting.
Yeah, I was on, and then I got cut off. And did you ask him, because this is when I got cut off, where you can actually buy the magazine?
Where you can buy the magazine?
Like, where is it? Where can you find it? I thought you were asking that, because I always look for it when I'm out.
Well, it's on newsstands. I think like any other magazine, you can find it. We didn't talk to him about that. But obviously, you can order it. But their website, his own admission, is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not a good website. But we were talking about the targeting of that particular magazine and really what its place is. I mean,
you've
been around the sport for a long time, been a player, a fan, a kid, and on through. What's your perception of the magazine now?
Well, for me, it is what I was kind of just talking about. I feel like coaches get it. Some players get it. If you're dialed into it or you know someone who can get you a subscription or you see it and you pay for it. But I think the average person out there doesn't know where it is. I mean, I actually do look for it sometimes when I'm in airports or magazine stands because I want to see if it's out there. And I just think that it's really hard for people to get to it. I think they do a great job. I think Jason Olive's come and done a great job. They have good access. I like that they have coaches write articles. There's the technical side of things. I think there are a lot of coaches out there that use this magazine that actually help them coach. So that part I love about it, but I think the circulation is for me is what the problem is.
Listener Jeff Twining sent us a good email about this, and he was talking about the fact that Jason Olive wanted to get to the 12 to 20-year-old girl or young woman as part of the target audience. And Jeff was making the point that for his daughter anyway, he said he's got a 16-year-old daughter that plays high school, plays club.
Mm-hmm.
She isn't really in touch with it. She's not that into it. The only way she gets the information is because he has a subscription. So he'll tell her about the new clothes or tell her about the event coming up, whether it's AVP or national team. And unfortunately, she, you know, as a player, can't name even a player on the national team, women's or men's.
That's always baffled me.
And that's the disconnect.
There are so many girls that play volleyball. I have them in my club, and I'm always asking about the beach stars or indoor stars.
Yeah.
And a lot of them don't No. And they don't get the magazines. They don't read the magazines. I mean, it should be the magazine for our sport. Every kid, boy or girl, playing the sport should get it, like we get Sports Illustrated.
Absolutely. The thing is I've said this before about women's sports, and yeah, go ahead and send me the hate mail, but one of the interesting thing is women now participate, but they don't flock in fans. They're not fans the same way you see a lot of men are. Men, yeah. And many times, are fans of not only what they play, but stuff they never did play. They're fans of. They follow. Yeah. They watch. They know. They get the magazines. They read the articles. And I don't see that as much on the female side of things. There are some, but you don't see so much fandom going on. And so I think it's an interesting thing for a magazine to try and target a group that typically does not turn out in a fan role.
Yeah, you make a great point. And I think what they can do is get to the club directors. There's mailing lists. You know, you offer whatever the cost is for subscription if you get this many kids in your club, and just try to get it at that level. I think it's hard for them to go out and actually pitch it to clubs. But if you can somehow, send out things and make a incentive for those club owners, hey, you get a free subscription if we get 20 kids in your club, whatever it is, because it's good for the sport.
I think one of the things he was talking about in trying to reach that audience is shifting some of the stuff in the mag, looking more towards fashion and following pop culture and perhaps some of the things that attract more attention for some of these young women than being a fan of volleyball. Yeah, they're into clothes, they're into fashion, they're into a lot of different areas and self-help or the shape type stuff, Shape Magazine and those kinds of things. So trying to tailor the magazine a bit more towards that audience.
And feature those kids. Also,
you absolutely have to do that.
You feature your stars in a way that kids go, oh, my God, that's the girl from Sportcheck. That's the girl from Coast Volleyball. Oh, my God, she's one of the best players in the country. And look at her here. You know what I mean?
Better yet, that's the girl from my club.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's kids want to buy it, and her friends want to buy it. And the next thing you know, everyone's getting more and more into it. You do it with the college players as well.
So it's a long-term thing. Everything we're talking about is 6, 8, 9 months, 12 months, 18 months. You have to have this history, and you have to continue to build your audience and drag people in and keep them there.
No.
But I think they're going that way.
I just glanced down real quick at the message board. And you know Matt, who does all of our
Gardhoff.
He had that idea, but you took it from him. So that, and he's a creative guy, so that means you're onto something.
There you go.
About making it more of a lifestyle mag.
Well, that's what Jason was saying.
Yeah.
That's what he was talking about, is it has to be more of a lifestyle mag.
So. Olive's the right guy to get it done.
And Eric Rockle was on there talking about saying, hey, he's on newsstands all over the East Coast. He comes across it all the time. So you just have to find it on the newsstand. Let's talk about the women's national team. Off to a great start. 5 days, 6 matches. They started out over Thailand 3-1. And somebody's thinking, oh, Thailand, not that good. One of the things Thailand does, they're a little crazy. They fly around. They have a couple of good players. Couple of good arms. I've been very impressed with Thailand. They're not the biggest team, but they typically give teams trouble.
Isn't beating Germany 3-0 a good match for us? I mean, Germany...
That's a big deal.
Right? That's a big deal.
Big deal. So what happened is USA over Thailand 3-1, USA over Croatia 3-0.
There's Kazakhstan again. I love seeing them.
The Hawk, the Golden Hawk. And then 3-0 over Germany, as you mentioned. Yeah. So the United States with a 3-0 record. The win over Germany is a big one. Absolutely. Germany is a team that I think is very good. They're on their way up, even though their record at the moment is not reflecting it. In the tournament so far, punch it up here real quick. Tournament so far, Germany only 2-1 inside the pool. They defeated Cuba, which I thought was an interesting match, and they defeated Kazakhstan. Cuba, for me, is the most disappointing team thus far in the tournament. Cuba is terrible. They're 1-2. Including that loss to the United States in a 3-0 beatdown. Or pardon me, loss to Germany in a 3-0 beatdown. So, I don't know, the United States 3-0, great start. Nine sets, only lost one. I think that's good. Losing one set to Thailand is no big deal. That's the third time I think they've faced each other in the last, 5 months. So Thailand definitely knows the United States well.
You asked me 2 weeks ago what a good finish for them would be, and I think Reed answered the same thing, but a semifinal appearance for me is where they have to be.
Absolutely.
After winning the Grand Prix.
They have to be in that top four.
It's an interesting quote you have here. Are you going to read this for everybody?
Go ahead.
It's from the coach of Germany, the head coach, about Logan Thom. It says, Logan Thom is now the best positioned player in the world. No other player can play like her. She has defense blocking, attacking from all positions. When she plays bad, she makes perhaps one mistake in a match. I had the luck to coach her in Italy. She never thanks me because she always wants to beat me. This year, I think every time Logan Tom was not there, they lost, and he goes on and on. Great shit. So my question to you is, because you see her play more than me, how is she getting better? How old is she? Where is she in her career? I mean, I thought, you know, a few years ago was her peak, but it seems like now she's playing better than ever.
I think she's still there. I think she's done a good job of stepping away a little bit, playing professionally, getting some of that rest in the summer, and then coming back to the national team. That's from Giovanni Giadetti, the Italian coach of the German national team.
She's a game changer then.
She
still
is. She is, for the reasons that he mentions. I think he's absolutely on point. She's a player you put in the game. She makes everybody else around her better because she is playing the entire game. When you think of the men's side of the game, you think of Giba, you think of Reed. Those are the types of players that I would compare her to on the men's side of the game, just the way that she's able to contribute throughout the entire rotation.
I remember when she won a national championship at Stanford, I believe it was her junior year, and they beat Long Beach State, who was at that time far and above the favorite, and they were physical and huge and ran that backslide. She shut down that slide as a left side blocker as well as I'd ever seen anybody. Took over the match and Stanford, I think it was Dunning's maybe first year, and they won in four, I believe. And I just remember at that time going, man, that is like a Jordan-esque type match. You know what I mean? They won because of her. She made everyone around her better.
She's steady. She's that player that you know if you need a decent side out, you can go to on that left-hand side, and that's important, especially when you're bringing along a young opposite like Destiny Hooker. You can't always go to that position. Typically, the opposite is the bailout for so many teams. You can't always go to that position, so you need somebody on the other side who you can just throw the ball out to and say, hey, we're going to get a good quality swing. She may not kill it every time, but we're going to get a good quality swing. And against Germany, 3-0 for the United States, Fluke Akinrado, who's been really awesome for this team, had a rough night. 3 kills, 4 errors on 17 swings. Not great. She's been steady in the middle. Where did that slack get picked up to still produce a 3-0? Logan Tom. 16 of 24 got blocked twice.
I mean,
that's crazy.
There you have it.
67%. That's not too bad. Meantime, she's passing 86% well and 71% perfect.
Who are the setters on the rosters for the U.S.?
Alicia Glass.
Yep.
And Lindsey Berg.
Gotcha.
Lindsey Berg, surprise. She's back from knee surgery. Healthy again.
She was a great spark in Beijing. When I was there, they were down to Italy. I think you were doing that match, actually. And she came in and great from the service line and a great leader and always been a fantastic player. But I was really impressed with her.
She was awesome from the service line. Yeah. And she is. She's one of those players that you put in a match and she's steady. Just like
Absolutely.
Tom. All the experience. You look at Bound, another example. Uh-huh. Heather Bound in the middle. Another player with incredible experience who you can put in a match. You know is not going to get nervous, going to make the players around them better. So that helps to bring along that kind of young and old mesh that you have at this point experience-wise.
And Glass is the future?
At this point, that's what they've committed to.
Where's Nellie Spicer in all this?
You know, Nellie got a little bit of time in Grand Prix, but I think that the coaches have identified the fact that Glass is their player for the moment. They're going to go with her. I think, you know, coaches need to make that choice at some point, and it appears that Glass has gotten that behind her. And while she's had some errors here and there, she's still growing, she's still improving, and I think they're going to stick with her long term. And I think it's why you see a person like Berg on a World Championships roster.
Yeah.
Because you can't have another young setter to just throw in there.
Can't have two of them in there.
No, you saw that with the men's team. You had Kevin Hansen setting. When things went bad, you put in Jonathan Winder, who hasn't played hardly at all.
Yeah.
You stick him in, it's a crapshoot. You really don't know what you're getting. When you have a player like Lindsey Berg and you can put her in there, you know what you're getting. You know you're going to have that steady play immediately from that position. So that's why I think you have the young setter starting, who you're putting your kind of money on for the next couple of years. Then you have that veteran player to talk to her in points and also get in if things are really going bad.
Yeah.
So I think that's good. The United States women, I think, are going to be very good through the rest of this tournament. They're going to face Kazakhstan tomorrow and then Cuba the day after that to finish up their first round.
What happens in the next round?
The next round, I got to go to the competition formula here. It's just it's a freaking mess. The second round, there are two pools. There's Pool E and Pool F. And from those, then you will have
two teams each. No?
Oh, gosh. It looks like you have another pool. The semifinals is actually going to be three teams in two pools. I can't even read this thing. I haven't gotten this far in the tournament.
When do you
Who
start
cares?
Working? That's the key.
No, I don't.
Oh.
This is not on.
We're not doing any of it.
No. I've seen on the internet that it's on From Sport.
Universal Sports?
No Universal Sports. They pushed for it. No money.
You got to get paid.
I know. Budget cuts. Budget cuts at Universal Sports, so no go with the Women's World Championships. I thought we should show the women's over the men's. quite honestly. The women's team is better. I think they're going to be in the semifinal. They won the Grand Prix. I think they're the more intriguing story at the moment versus the men.
Yeah.
We did the men's, but, of course, the United States wasn't even in it. We hardly mentioned them. It was just the men's final featuring teams from outside the United States. I think this would have been better. But, yeah, this will be interesting to watch. So second round, there will be two pools. I'd expect the United States to advance onto those pools. I think take top four teams and move those on. So the United States already off to a 3-0. I'd expect a 5-0. The way Cuba's been playing, there's no way they can defeat the United States. Cuba, I think they should be a better team than they are, but they're one of these emotional squads that as soon as they get going the wrong direction, it's hard to get them to turn it around.
Is it over for them? I mean, are they
for this tournament,
on the downside? Or?
No, I don't think so. I think they have some really good players. They took Yanela Santos and put her in the opposite and actually went with a true 5-1 system instead of that 6-2 that they've been running.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to take a little bit of transition. I thought that was a good move and would pay dividends immediately. But it has not, obviously, from the start they've had, losing to Germany pretty handily. And I have to look up the other teams they lost to, but it's just not a good start at all for Cuba. So that's my biggest surprise of the tournament as far as early results. And I've lost my tournament page. I'm going to tell you about some of the other pools here. You can look it up on FIVB.ch. You can check out all the pool info. You can click on Women's World Championships. I think Japan is a good surprise. Japan off to a nice start, 3-0.
Japan men doing better, too, aren't they?
Japan men are a little bit better, but I think the women are the biggest surprise. They have Saori.
Men, too, are getting better.
Saori Kimura, their opposite, who's just killing it. She's really good. So Brazil undefeated, Italy undefeated. No surprise with either one of those.
You know what's crazy? And I don't want to get away from the indoor game, but in that event at Sanya China, the FIVB beach volleyball event, they had a 14 and a 16-year-old girl. Girls.
Not women.
Playing in the open. Isn't that crazy?
Well, we're going to get to that in just a second. Yeah. I want to talk about that event. Yeah. But finish up on the inside in the indoor game. Russia 3-0. Russia, of course, not present in the Grand Prix, but now playing in World Championships. They're going to be a force to be reckoned with. Russia 3-0. Korea 3-0. Neither of those two teams in a very dominant pool, Pool D, featuring Turkey, China, Dominican Republic, and Canada. Dominican Republic, though, 0-3, I think that's kind of a surprise for them. They're generally better than that. So that's the early results. Serbia 3-0, Japan 3-0. I think Japan is off to a great start. We'll see where they go.
Yeah.
Of course, playing at home, big deal. Great place to play Japan from an organization standpoint, if you're on whatever team, and the atmosphere provided, even when you're not playing, Japan is nice, 5,000, 6,000 fans. You play Japan, it's 15,000 fans, sold out, crazy. Lots of fun.
Yeah, and the reason why I had brought that up is because I think they're making a push back in Japan and China. I think volleyball is becoming more important there. Well, I mean, I know the women's indoor China team used to be the team. They've actually dropped off, but in the beach game and in the indoor game with Japan, all getting better. I think they're taking a liking to the sport. And
that's huge for volleyball.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely huge for volleyball. They have to have Japan as a marketplace because NHK, the broadcaster, puts a ton of money into it. It's televised nationally. And
you've been there?
Spectated. Japan?
Yeah,
you were there seven, 8 times.
Osaka, is that where you guys did?
I don't know. I've been all over Japan for friendlies and also
you did the
for world championships.
World Championships. Yeah.
It's a wonderful place to play. Always so incredibly well organized. It's two things that Europe isn't. It's technologically advanced and it's clean. And it's great. You know, it's weird. Japanese people,
do they play netball there?
It's Great Britain or something. Netball. So, yeah, it's a very strange place culturally, but I like it a lot. It's easy to get things, and people are helpful, although they have no idea what you're saying, and I have no idea what they're saying.
I'm going to put it on my list, Barney.
You got to go. You got to go. Go for a volleyball event.
I mean, been to Beijing, so.
Been there, done that.
But I'd love to go to Japan.
Japan, cleanest place I've ever been. Construction sites, unbelievably clean. So you mentioned the Sanya Open. I want to talk about the Sanya Open.
Okay.
I want to know, this is a tournament that goes on after the postseason awards are already handed out. Season's over. Why do these tournaments even happen?
I have a couple of thoughts on it, Kevin.
Okay.
One, you and I were talking before the show even started. There's a part of me that doesn't care about these events because they happen so late. But then there's another part of me where you see these events happen in golf kind of after the year is over. And they are important. There's a chance to make money. It's a chance to sometimes it's a chance to sometimes play with a new partner. You know, Nicole and Carrie played, I believe, in Dubai after the Olympics in 2008 because Misty was on Dancing with the Stars, and they won. Well, they saw that they could win together, had pretty good chemistry, and here they are back together again. Jen and April in 2008, after not making the Olympics, mm-hmm. made a great push in October and November by winning a couple of international events, and that all of a sudden boosted them into the top in 2009. So there are some it's weird to me why they happen so late, because, man, I've moved on to football. I mean, women's indoor's going on. But for those reasons, I think it's cool.
So it's maybe sort of a preseason opportunity for players.
That's what I think. That's what I think the plus positive is on those events.
Is there any negative?
It's late in the year. You got to still train. You're playing deep into the calendar year. How hard do you train? Do you train too hard? Are you taking a break?
And there's a big break between these tournaments and the end of the
tournaments.
It's a little bit like college football. Yeah. Finish up in November?
Late November.
And then you wait until early January. Why do you do that? It's not even the same team.
You know, I remember when Ohio State played a couple years ago in the national championship game, maybe against LSU, maybe 3 years ago, whatever, and it was – they hadn't played in 62 days. I mean, how can you expect to come out and be sharp?
You can't. And it may be the same thing here, and that's why it's more of a preseason thing.
So,
opportunity for interesting combinations.
Yeah.
And so you had Nicole and Kerry get together. Nicole Branagh, Kerry Walsh.
Yeah, and they got fifth.
Yep.
They lost to Kessie and Ross. Kessie and Ross did end up going to the loser's bracket and getting third. China ended up winning. China's really starting to play well now. But I think that was big for Kerry and Nicole. For Kerry not to have played basically at all. She played two matches with Brooke. For her not to really play at all and to go out there with Nicole and beat the best American team, 17-15 and third, whether it's in November or not, is still, I think, a great confidence booster for them. I think it kind of showed them that we could be one of the top teams together. Because if you think about it, two teams are going to go to the Olympics, 2012. Let's say Misty is not in the equation. Let's say she doesn't play. Jen and April are going. They're determined. They're on the right path. They got the points. Who's going to be that next team? If you split up Kerry and Nicole, then you're going to have three teams that are going to have a chance, and one of them is going to be out. If you put together Nicole and Kerry, those are the two best teams.
Okay, but the odd woman out in that is Misty.
The odd woman out is Misty.
Misty sort of self-selected herself, said, I'm going to put volleyball on the back burner. Does this mean she's finished?
When I talked to her in Cincinnati on the stage, it was interesting. She came up to me and hugged me and thanked me. And, she and I have always had a good relationship, always been friends, but it was an interesting hug, I felt. You know, it was like, I just want to say thanks and hope, you know, good luck, because she knew Jess was pregnant. And, you know, we kind of talked and, she said, I'm not using the R word. She always says that. You know, she's not saying retired. But I do believe, Barney, she needs to use this year to focus on her marriage with Matt, to travel with him, to start the family that they've always wanted to start.
Matt Traynor playing right now with the Texas Rangers in the World Series.
So, you know, I think that's a good move. The last time she did it, she was going to stay away from the game a year anyway, but then she tore her Achilles, so she was actually forced out. Then she came back and watched, got the bug again, and went. So, you know, I don't know what this year was for her. She said she had fun, but I know she had some injuries. I think she's sick of being away from Matt all the time. So I think this year is important. Now, if she comes back in 2012 and says, I'm ready to make a late run, play with me, Kerry, let's go to London, that's when we would have some real interest in our game.
Oh, that's the question.
Because our Kerry Nicole in pole position at this point,
but
what do you do?
Just for the marketing dollars alone, third time around, the Golden Girls of the Beach again.
Yeah.
Would she come back just for that attention, that moment, to try and run through that
thing? I say she does, but I think I'm in the minority. But there's a big factor out there that nobody knows. Is she going to get pregnant? And when?
That is her number one priority.
Her number one priority. So say she gets pregnant way down the line and she can't play Olympics, she's out. What if she doesn't through 2011? Does she say, you know what? Put it on hold another year. I don't know. I know it's her priority. She's been there, done that. She's won two gold medals.
One way to find out. We're going to get Misty on the show again here. We haven't had Misty on in a long time. We're going to get Misty on the show because I just wrote it down right now.
If I take the family aspect out of it, the pregnancy and all the stuff that no one can control, then I say you got to come back.
I think
when it gets down to it, she's going to want to play again.
If you took that away, she'd get away from it a little bit, she'd get the bug again, but it's the family that complicates things. Believe me, I know every day my family complicates things. I could be out in the desert just riding around on a motorcycle. Instead, I'm here taking care of the kids all the time. So, not a complaint.
Yeah,
I have one more question about getting to Branna and Walsh as a team.
Yep.
Does this make any sense? I mean, isn't it like if you put Sean Scott and Phil Dahauser together on the men's side? You just took two big bodies and stuck them out there?
No, and here's why.
Okay.
When Nicole transferred over from blocker to defender with Elaine, Nicole was a primary blocker when she first came on the tour and played with Holly. When she started playing with Elaine, everyone said, how are they going to do it? They're both blockers. Well, they both worked at defense tremendously hard. Nicole would go to Brazil and spend a lot of time. They both became great defenders, in my opinion, Elaine and Nicole. But Nicole became an outstanding defender, and EY was such a good blocker that when it came down to it, it ended up being 80% EY blocking, 20% Nicole blocking. So Nicole almost became the primary defender during those, you know, that 2-year run they had. And when Nicole's the MVP, she was playing defense most of the time, digging balls, and when she dug them, she trannied. She put balls away.
That's the scary part, yeah.
And that was the difference. And she's not a great blocker. She's okay.
She's tall, but she's not a great blocker.
Okay.
Right.
But she's not a next, you know, she's not the elite of the elite. I mean, EY was a great technical blocker, great hands. Kerry Walsh, a difference maker at the net. Nicole does a good job, but she's a good, you know, let Kerry go block. You can split and save your energy for most of the tournament because Kerry can defend and Nicole can block. And then when it gets down to it, you do what Misty and Kerry did. Kerry runs at the net.
So when you think about Nicole and all the changes she's made from side to side, from blocker to defender, is she the most versatile player in the game?
Yeah, and she's the best right, and she's a great right side player. Remember, she started her career on the left. And then she and EY would switch all the time. And then when she went to the right, they started winning. And they were in 12 finals in 2009.
That's okay.
In 2010, she was on the left with Misty. When she went to the right before the tour ended, they won Long Beach going away. She's better on the right, and you have Kerry stay on her natural side. That's why I think that team makes sense.
Okay. Well, we're going to find out hopefully next season, and who knows where we'll find out. It may just have to be on FIVB. We'll see what develops domestically. We talked about that last week. If you want to reference last week's show, get back and talk about some of the stuff that was going on the beach or the week before when the announcement was going to happen from the ABP. Still undecided what's going to happen on the beach side. Hey, we've reached the time for our first commercial break. You're listening to Net Live here on the Volleyball Network. Chris Geeter-McGee and myself, Kevin Barnett, holding down the home court. We have upcoming Aaron Brock, head trainer for the men's and women's national teams. He's going to talk to us about getting a team through an incredibly challenging tournament like World Championships. So this is Net Live. We'll talk to you in just a moment. Hang in there. About the USYVL, the United States Youth Volleyball League? Having taught over 100,000 kids ages 7 to 15 the sport of volleyball, the league's proven techniques, super fun approach, and self-esteem lifting methods are unmatched. Truly, volleyball starts here. For more information about the league and programs in your area, visit usyvl.org. That's usyvl.org.
Hey, Reed.
Yeah, Dan?
Hey, if I wanted to call in and talk to you guys, what would I have to do?
Well, first you'd have to have something meaningful to say.
I can do that.
And then you want to probably scale that down to about 20 seconds.
Done.
And then you want to pick up the phone and dial 347-677-1525.
So I can call 347-677-1525 and say, Reed Pretty, you're my favorite volleyball player ever.
Now, Dan, when you say that, are you making fun of me? Is the joke on me? I don't get it.
Get off the bench, sub yourself in, pick up the phone and call.
The Net Live will not be held responsible for opinions and ideas expressed by others.
After
NetLive.com. The Net Live. You're here. It's Monday, the 1st of November. We're eating all the Halloween candy for my kids. Yeeter's over there. He's got chocolate all over his face.
Millie had more candy yesterday and last night than she's had in her entire life put together. And the sugar high that was going on at my house was incredible.
Is it more than when we were kids, or is it the same?
I gotta call Mom and Dad and ask. Because, I mean, I'm talking off the walls, dude. Richter.
Yeah, it's that
off
age.
Off the charts.
My boys finally have settled down. At 6 and 8, they ate a bit, but it wasn't the same gnarly thing that it was 2 or 3 years ago, where they just, absolutely like you're describing, went bonkers.
Mine
off
was
the charts.
Freak show.
Stuffing it in their face as quick as they can. It's all over the carpet, the walls, their face. It's just my clothes because they're grabbing onto me. It's just nutty. All right, want to welcome in our first guest of the show here today. Maybe he can talk about the effects of sugar on children. He's got some medical background, yeah. The head of athletic training and treatment for the United States national teams, Aaron Brock, has been in this position for about 5 years. He's now in charge of both teams down there in Anaheim. And a guy who I charge with getting me back into playing shape, and sadly, I sit here with broken knees, so I have to address that perhaps at another time off the air. Aaron Brock, welcome to the Net Live.
Hey, Barney, how you doing? Great to be here. I take no responsibility for your position right now, by the way. I'm wiping my hands of that one.
Responsibility? I'm giving you blame, sir. You can't take it. You're
blame,
being, you're being heaped upon
call
you.
It what you will. I don't want any of it.
Well, hey, Brock, you took over the program for the men's team about 5 years ago. Talk about how
right.
you reorganized the athletic training program for the U.S. side.
Yeah, it was a pretty big task moving from the Olympic Training Center where we had everything, as you know, everything was in place, medical and performance teams and programs already there and established, and, you know, everything in-house under one roof, so to speak, you know, at the Olympic Training Center there. And moving out to Anaheim, we didn't have anything, you know, it was pretty much starting from scratch, so everything from the medical side of things to the performance side of things pretty much started up from nothing. And so, everything from obtaining supplies and equipment to establishing a network of healthcare providers to work with, such as physicians and massage therapists and chiropractors and physical therapists and you name it, you know, you need to put that all together. So had that all lined up pretty well, and then the women came to town and we had to you know, reevaluate and kind of scramble a little bit to, you know, make sure we prepared for them. We hired Jill Wasmek, who's the athletic trainer primarily with the women's team. So she pretty much takes care of the women's team. And I fortunately, you know, don't have a lot to do there because Jill does a great job with them. And so she pretty much takes care of most of them. And I take care of the men. Yeah. And then also the administrative side of things as the director of sports medicine for the program. But yeah, I think we got a real nice thing going. We actually have had some good involvement with the USOC lately, helping us out with a strength coach, Tim Pelote. He's in the facility at the American Sports Center now in Anaheim. So real, real big, you know, help to me and to Jill, you know, on the physical preparation side of things. We got some nice equipment and facilities going now, so I like where we're at.
In talking about developing those relationships with physicians and other service providers to the team, how did you go about getting those guys, getting the right people, men, women, to service the team and get them to volunteer their time?
Yeah, that's a really good question and something that you know, doesn't come easy, and it's still a little bit of a work in progress. You know, what I tried to do as much as I could is come here and do as much research as I could. I talked with the Angels head athletic trainer, Ned Berger, and he helped me out a lot, directing me towards people that would be helpful for our teams. You know, and then it's just a matter of networking. It's meeting these people, and then you meet these people, and you talk to them, and you work with them, and you kind of get to know people and see who fits in best. And it is just a real it's a thing about fit, you know, and it's about a team environment and a team dynamic. And so, you know, there's been several times where I've thought someone or you know, this kind of arrangement would work out well, and it didn't. And, you know, other times it really has worked out well. So it really is just a work in progress. and getting the right people in this team is hard to do, but it's so important. And once you get them, you really realize how valuable the people that get it. And there's just a lot that goes into working with these athletes and working a part of the team that not just every healthcare provider gets. And so once you get them, it's real nice. But we're still working through it. But I like the program we have in place.
When you guys moved from the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs, both teams were based there. The men moved in 2005. The women moved in, was it 2007, correct?
Yeah, it was just after the Olympics, so 2008.
2008, okay.
Actually started up in 2009, so this is just the second season.
Yeah, my mistake. So when you moved out of underneath the USOC umbrella, was it sort of a get-out thing with the USOC? Had things gone bad, and now it's sort of transitioned back to how can we help, how can we provide services, in this case, in the strength coach?
Yeah, I don't think things that had gone bad necessarily. I don't know if they really had much of a model for what we did. So when we left the Olympic Training Center, it was kind of like, okay, you know, see you later. You're a bit on your own, even though it wasn't bad blood per se. It was just that they just didn't, I don't think, know how to interact with the program that was in-house, and now they're out. And so it was a little bit, you know, a little bit of the on your own type of feeling at first. Which was okay. You know, I didn't mind that. It was a challenge, and you know, you're not working with as much as you were previously. But I think you know, we did pretty well. And then over time, I think the USOC became much more interested in what we were doing. And not that they weren't interested before, but maybe they didn't have the system in place to service us as well as they are now. And over time, you've seen a change, I guess, maybe in the philosophy or the way that their you know, programs are set up now, where they have different sportfolios, they call it, and different performance services that can service teams like ours. So I think it's more of a just putting in the system that was necessary. And now, absolutely, we see over the last couple of years, for sure, we've seen the USOC just be spectacular at you know, allowing us the resources to do a couple things that we'd wanted to do. And now with the personnel, Sean Dolan is a dietitian that was hired by the USOC here recently, and she's, you know, available to our teams for whatever we need. So that's been a great help. Strength coach, as I mentioned, Tim Pelotin. And the USOC is really, really doing a nice job helping us out.
You're listening to The Net Live. We're talking to Aaron Brock, the head of athletic training and treatment for the women's national team. And Aaron, this is Geeter. Talk about the challenges that go on with the World Championships with our women playing five matches in 6-day period.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty rigorous. And right now, Jill Wasmek is the athletic trainer in Japan with the women's team, and I just finished up with the men's team. You know, obviously there's a ton of matches in a short period of time. There's a lot that goes into it. I think even from the beginning, you know, something you might not think about that much is just airline itineraries. You know, some of it's within our control, some of it's not. But having a good airline itinerary is really important. We don't want, you know, 8-hour layovers. We don't want to leave at 4 in the morning. We don't want to get in at 4 in the morning. And so, you know, that's just to start out the trip. If we can start out with a good itinerary, that's real helpful. And then obviously we hit the ground running. And once we get into the competition, to me, it's a matter of maintenance and recovery. And this coaching staff, as with the previous, Hugh McCutcheon, they did a great job in having a handle on what the athletes needed. And, you know, Barney knows that, you know, everybody isn't the same. You know, if a guy's played 2 or 3 matches in a row, he needs a little something different than someone who hasn't played much. And so what we do is we just take all that into consideration. We break it down individually and see what that person needs, whether it's, you know, something on the physical side with an active warm-up and some kind of warm it up, stretch it out, cool it down, you know, some of the other physical things from modalities to massage, some of those, you know, recovery aspects. And then we just take what each individual needs and work from it from there. Obviously, when we're talking recovery, nutrition's a big thing. And so, you know, you always have your breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but also another important part of that nutrition aspect is the pre and post match. And so we always have snacks available pregame. I also mix up some protein carbohydrate recovery shakes through Muscle Milk after the matches. And, you know, so nutrition's a big thing. Obviously, sleep is a huge thing. You know, the daily schedule ends up being a big deal. You know, we always try to leave an afternoon block for the athletes to take a nap. And I know that sounds a little foo-foo maybe for some people listening in here. Oh, they need their nap. But, you
I
know,
still need one.
Play some... Hey, if I could get a nap every day, I think I'd be a better person. But, you know, it's the reality of the day-to-day grind here. But when you're on the road, it really is possible to get that hour nap in or more. Sometimes when you're playing late at night, it's hard to rev down, and so you're not getting to bed real late, and you know, you're up kind of early. So on the sleep standpoint, we like to make sure they get enough of it. And, you know, it's continually taking that recovery side of things to the next level, and that's the biggest thing, playing so many matches in a short period of time.
Are there treatments for recovery available today that were not used 10 years ago?
You know, that's a good question. We're actually really just starting to experiment with a couple other modalities from a treatment standpoint. There are some electrical stimulation recovery aspects. There's a machine called Compex. It's owned by DonJoy. You know, that's an electrical stimulation to the muscle that is supposedly going to help with lactic acid clearance and some recovery of the muscle tissue. I honestly haven't used it enough to have a verdict on that one just yet. Another thing, actually, that the women's team is traveling with right now, it's an intermittent compression unit called a Normatec, and it's essentially you know, trying to move some of the edema and some of the accumulation of fluids in the extremities. I know that people have had some good anecdotal comments to say about the Normatec and the compression. So those are two things: the electrical stimulation to the muscles, some of the compression that we have. But then, you know, from the other recovery aspect, you know, we really improved our nutrition recovery, at least education and what we have available. Again, with the sleep, I think that's a big thing when it comes to recovery. Also physically, I think we make sure we get in the weight room 2 times a week at least, even when we're competing. Sometimes we're lifting the day before or whatever, but we got to get 2 of them in. And, you know, we don't kill them. I don't take them through a huge, you know, workout. It's almost, you know, just to get a sweat going, just to get some stress to those muscles. And, you know, I think that from a recovery standpoint, as odd as it may sound, some weight training is an important part to recovery. And then just the mental aspect of recovery. I think not having a jam-packed schedule for the day, you know, let them have some time where, you know, they can play some cards, watch a movie, read a book, etc. You know, I think those are the aspects of recovery that I think of most.
Brock, where were you when Doug was coaching this team? Come on. Doug Beal, this is the kind of stuff that he absolutely dismissed. This is like new age, fancy-pantsy stuff. Doug Beal was all about leaving at 4 a.m., practicing at 10 at night. I mean, no recovery. I remember a bus ride in Argentina. I got in trouble because I was like, we have to have some food. We've been on this bus for 6 hours. Feed us. Stop the freaking bus, Doug.
I've heard we've gotten a little soft compared to Doug's days. But
that's how he would describe it.
You know, everybody
soft.
Has their style, and I don't know what to say.
Listen, we go on the road. Doug would take over the weight program all of a sudden. He'd have us doing, like, good mornings with 225 on your back, you know, bending over. Blow the hammies out day before a match. We needed your voice in there, Brock.
Maybe not the best idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Brock, he's not bitter at all about this.
I love Doug.
No, I don't sense that at all.
Yeah. Hey, Brock, you touched on it briefly, but that was one of my questions for you as a trainer. I mean, I know I used to sit in there and gripe to you about this or that, and the players talk to you about their bodies and what's going on and how to get better and how to recover from injury, or whether major or minor, during tournaments and between tournaments and over years. I mean, what does your staff do to help keep an athlete mentally ready to play or to perform or to return to action?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting part. You know, there are the outside professionals that we use. We use an individual, Ken Revisa. He's been real good on the mental training side of things, and so
visualizing
I think from the sports psychology standpoint, You know, we do have some interaction with a professional in that regard, so I'd like to think that that helps a little bit as well. And then, you know, obviously, you know, Barney, I mean, when you're injured, especially, you have a lot of interaction with myself or the athletic trainer involved, and so hopefully, you know, the interaction with myself is good. You know, I get to know these guys real well, obviously spending as much time together as we do, and so not considering myself as a psychologist by any means, but certainly there to discuss, like you said, how the body's feeling and what we do about it. And so, you know, if they're feeling like something's not right, then we take action. And whether that's, you know, with some of the modalities, I bring the, you know, the ultrasound, electrical stimulation, laser machine around. I use a lot of manual therapy, whether that's massage, you know, different kinds of other manual techniques. I use grasping instruments and different things like that. So I have a lot of things in the arsenal as far as actual treatments physically to do. But on the mental side, you know, it is a little bit less structured. But we do have, you know, a couple things in place that hopefully helps them out in that regard as well.
Question coming off the chat board. One of our listeners wants to know if they cut back from 15 to 12 beers a week, will that help their performance?
You know, I don't think so. I'd say just keep it at 15.
I love our listeners.
Just leave it there. Brock, you have a little story for us, or anything you can think of about challenges traveling with your job, equipment failures, supply limits, something you had to find sometime, anything that jumps out at you?
Geez, you know, there's a handful of things, you know, man, I we had a nice electrical stimulation unit, you know, that I had on the road, and it was one of my first trips, and I ended up, you know, pulling the infamous non-converted power.
Oh, no.
Plugging in, so I zapped that one. That was not cool. And, you know,
smoke, fire.
You do that, you pull it out real quick thinking maybe you got it in time, but obviously you didn't. So,
yeah, then your room smells like a computer factory.
Electrical fire, yep. And as I did that, that actually knocked out electricity to the entire floor of the hotel, so everybody's wondering what happened there. And I admit I didn't fess up to it at the time. I was like, I don't know what the heck's going on. I don't have lights either. But that wasn't cool. You know, there's another time as far as travel goes that, you know, we'd had a late night, you know, the night before, and so kind of just throwing stuff together, packing up, and ended up thinking it was a good idea to check a couple bottles of wine, you know, in my checked luggage, and that didn't turn out so well. It actually didn't even make it to the ticket counter. I think I set my bag down in line at the airport getting ready to check in, and they broke, and there's just red wine everywhere, and so, you know, that's something that I don't do anymore is check wine. But, you know what, there's a couple things off the top of my head of things not to do, I guess, when traveling.
There you go. Always convert your voltages first. Hey, one last question coming off the chat board, I thought was a good one. What do you guys do to cope with the time zone changes? We've talked to a lot of people about melatonin or
Ambien.
Light exposure.
Sure.
Ambien. I mean, there's all these things. Yeah, Rita's always talking about Ambien. What do you think has had the most success, or is this something that's highly individualized for the athletes?
You know, that's a really good question, and what I hadn't mentioned is regarding the concept of sleep, and this was through the USOC. They brought in a sleep specialist. His name is Dr. Mark Rosekind of Alert Solutions. He's up there in Northern California. He's come down and talked with our teams over the last couple years about everything related to sleep. And what his group does, and he works with a lot of different companies. I know, you know, when the trying to put guidelines together on how long truckers can drive without a break, or you know, those kinds of things. That's what his group does, is they study sleep, and they're experts in that area. And so he gives us a presentation, which is a great presentation, just about sleep in general. And then what his group also does is put together light exposure recommendation. Light exposure is one way that you can adjust your circadian clock, your internal, you know, rhythm, and you know, you can kind of set yourself on that time zone a little quicker with strategic use of light. And so his group, and honestly, I don't even know the calculations on how you determine when you get light and when you don't. Dr. Rosekind takes care of that for us. but there are specific recommendations that I took, for example, to Italy for World Championships and said, okay, hey, tomorrow don't get light before this time, and then we're going to want to try to get sunlight during this time. So that's one thing that we use to adjust to the different time zones is strategic light exposure.
Nice.
Also, when it comes to sleep, we do use, intelligently use, I will add, prescription, sleep aids. And this is through Dr. Rosenkind's education as well. He has studied all of these sleep aids, and Ambien is certainly one that works well. So we have a little bit of an in service on the appropriate way to use these sleep aids to make sure that the athletes know how to take it, when to take it, and not abuse it. And it really is helpful. So those are a couple things that we use to adjust time zones, some sleep aids and some light exposure.
Yeah, the light exposure. I just wonder what you do if you go to Belgium in the winter.
No, you're done.
There's no light. It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it's like nighttime,
you know,
all
what?
The time.
There's some inside light that if it's strong enough, that's the next best option. But
great. Now I'm like a lizard. I'm laying on my couch with a halogen facing right in my eyes. That sounds comfortable, Brock.
It might be the only option you have, but at least from the guys talking about Russia, that might be the best option they got.
Aaron Brock is the head of athletic training and treatment for both U.S. national teams. He is the athletic trainer that travels with the men's national team, has done that for a number of years, and we thank him for spending a little bit of his day with us here on the Net Live. Aaron, thanks so much. Get out and ride your Harley all around. It's a beautiful day.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. Thanks, Barney. Take care, man.
All right, good talking to you. Aaron Brock, ladies and gentlemen.
I was going to ask him, since I'm going to Hawaii on Wednesday, what he recommended, surf, rage, and volleyball?
Yeah, Mai Tais.
The trifecta?
Mai Tais. I think you need that, too, and at least 15 beers, Matt Gardhoff style.
I'm already there in my mind.
Hey, I've got a quick caller I want to get to. 561, you've been in the queue for a little bit. You're on the Net Live. Who are you? Where are you calling from?
This is Ozzy Barreras. I'm calling from Florida in regards to the Rands Classic tournament.
Very good. Let me turn the show over to Geeter here because I have a couple of people calling from the Florida area.
For those of you guys that don't know this story out there, Rance Jones, a beach volleyball player from Florida, was playing in a tournament, had an aneurysm, and has been in a coma ever since. His friends, Ozzy Barreras and Paul Christopher and Mitch Sadowski, are throwing a tournament this weekend at Deerfield Beach, so we wanted to have these guys on. They're trying to raise funds just to tell the story of Rance and how the community has gotten involved and how we can all help. So, Ozzy, thanks for joining us, and is Mitch with you as well?
Mitch should be joining us, and also Paul Christopher PC should be on the line here shortly.
Okay.
I've got another number here. I've got another 414 number listening in. You can put him up on the air. Sounds like somebody riding a car.
Yes, I am. How can you tell?
Is that Mitch?
All right, guys. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, Mitch, why don't you just tell Rance's story and how it went down and where you guys are now with it?
Well, Oz, was the tournament in April?
Yeah, it was the Panama City Young Guns AVP qualifying tour.
Yeah, and Rance was playing in the semifinals, and towards the end of the, I think it was the first set, Rance kind of noticed something wasn't right, and he went over and sat down and was talking to another friend of ours, Joey Middlebrooks, about what he was feeling, and they kind of knew at the time that he was having some serious physical problems with regards to the aneurysm that had ruptured and it was starting to hemorrhage. So Joey and a number of other people attended to Rance, and they got an ambulance called and got him to the hospital, and they've pretty much been working on him since.
So he has been in a coma ever since?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Now tell us about this weekend coming up. I know he's a firefighter, but has not been with them long enough to have full benefits.
Oz, you want to take that one?
I'm sorry, I didn't.
Ozzy's in Florida, so I think he's got a bad connection. But wanted to, Rance, because of his time on the job with the firefighting service, his full benefits weren't covered for any out-of-service ailments. Had it been on the job, he would have been fully covered, but from my understanding, he wasn't fully covered because he was playing in a volleyball tournament. So they only covered his expenses up to a certain point, and we're trying to help fill that gap a little bit.
Mitch, tell me about the tournament going on this weekend and how many people are playing and how people can get involved to help out.
Well, we don't have I don't have an exact number on registrations right now. It's definitely over about 200 at this point. And we've got a number of different divisions. We've got a men's open, which is a pro-am grab bag format. So everyone's name goes into a hat, you pull them out, and that's your partner for the day. It's actually a two-day tournament. We're also having some co-ed fours on Sunday. And we're also having an opening kickoff Friday night at 7 p.m.
Also, there's a Caring Bridge site. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. If you go to Caring Bridge and you look up Rance Jones, you can find some information on Rance's story, where he is, and just all the updates from the family.
Gotcha.
Yeah, if you want to follow up, I've got the site up now. It's www.caringbridge.org/visit/Rance Jones, R-A-N-S-E. J-O-N-E-S. And as he just mentioned, you can find out a little bit more about Rance, get updates on what's happening, and donate to his cause.
Also, there's a Facebook page, Rance Classic 2010. You can go there, find out information about the tournament. Also, there's a link to Cambridge, and also where you can make some donations to help his cause as well.
Great. We appreciate that, guys. Good luck this weekend.
Yeah, we've had some great response from people. Matt Furbringer was going to try and join us, but he's actually going to be at the wedding with you, Geeter. But Matt's offered to donate to Rance's family. I just actually, right before I came on, Eric Fanoy Moana is going to be sending us out some signed merchandise. So between that, Misty May and Phil Dalhauser are both contributing both some items, but they're also doing some video for the tournament as well. So the outpouring of support from our volleyball community has been absolutely amazing.
What has it done with the community in Florida? I mean, people don't know this that much, that don't travel around all these tournaments, but there is a huge, huge following in Florida for beach volleyball. It's a very tight-knit group. What has this done?
Well, you're right. It's a tight-knit group, but it's brought us a lot closer. You know, we see each other quite a bit, but it's really – really galvanized our community to come together for Rance.
It's brought up the whole volleyball community. I mean, not just only from Florida. I mean, from California, from the Northeast. Everybody's, like, reached out to those who are close friends with Rance and his family and just, you know, send out positive messages to us and everybody else, which has been just a great feedback. I mean, it's really brought everybody together. And if anybody who knew Rance, I mean, just, you know, he was all about the volleyball community and beach lifestyle and surfing, just a laid-back guy and such a competitor on the court. I mean, I'd miss him out there.
Hey, guys, we appreciate you coming on and telling the story. We'll definitely follow up after next week. I want to hear how it all went, and we'll keep trying to get people to go to that site and donate and help out the family.
Yeah, I really appreciate your help, Geeter.
All right, guys. Thanks
all
so
right,
much,
thanks,
man.
Gentlemen.
All right, thanks, Barney. Appreciate it.
All right. All right, the Rance Jones tournament going on this weekend. That's an important thing. It's great to hear how the volleyball community is rallying around the cause for Rance and all the way up to the professionals.
You know, Rance is one of those guys, too, that just everyone knew him, you know, and he played all different kinds of levels. He made AVP tournaments. He'd play on the East Coast tournaments, all the Florida tournaments, and he's married, and he's a firefighter, but he was a great, great guy. Loved the sport, and everyone loved him. And amazing story that he, because of his background, he knew what was going on. And that's the amazing thing. Like, he knew the symptoms,
yeah,
and that's pretty crazy. And he didn't panic, you know, and he's still in a coma right now. And, you know, they don't know how he's going to turn out. But hopefully, man, you know, he can get through this. He's a fighter, and, you know, you just hope for the best.
We've got the site up there on the chat board, caringbridge.org/visit/Rance Jones. So if you want to get behind that cause there, it's a good thing to do. All right, we're going to take a little bit of a break. We still have a lot of stuff to come. We have Holly McPeak going to join us for the College Volleyball Weekly coming up. We have the Up or Down. You are the Emperor, Geeter. Roster of the 1988 gold medal team. Would they play today, or would they be out of the gym?
Would they have won gold with you and I coaching?
course. Of course. There's no question to that. So we'll be right back. Talk to you in just a few here on The Net Live on thevolleyballnetwork.com.
The CrossFit program will have you running, jumping, lifting, climbing, and moving in dynamic and powerful ways. There are no machines, ellipticals, TVs, or mirrors. We train everyone from professional and collegiate athletes to soccer moms and retired teachers. With an average class size of 10, you get personal coaching and training. We sweat together, get fit together, and have a darn good time doing it. From beginners to weekend warriors to professional athletes, CrossFit South Bay is for anyone wanting to be in the best shape of their life. Visit us online at www.crossfitsouthbay.com and mention The Net Live for your 15% discount on any of our membership packages.
What is that, Yanni? I don't know what we got going there. Some sort of new age stuff.
Where's Jay Roche when you need him?
Wow, I don't know who's in control of this thing. Ladies and gentlemen, The Net Live here on thevolleyballnetwork.com. It's been a great show so far. I thought awesome information coming from Aaron Brock. I thought that was a very interesting discussion. If you're involved with volleyball at all, I think you need to re-listen to that interview and think about some of the things he said and how you can relate that to your teams any level.
I'd like to have him on again.
Yeah,
we've talked to him a lot. Because there's so much that can go on from juniors level all the way up that I don't think people have a clue in our sport.
We'll have to talk to him about the ramp up.
In the ramp up.
The ramp up for next year and managing players coming back from overseas and getting them ready for the national team season. I think that'd be
when
interesting.
When to have
discussion.
Them peaking at that right time and all that stuff that goes along with it. Also, wanted to ask him about concussions that are so big in football now. I'm seeing them a lot in high school and all the way through the NFL where guys are taking weeks off after getting a concussion and just what his take on that would have been. So,
what a good thing for volleyball, though. Not too much collisions.
There's one player, I think there's a female in college who got a concussion. She's now playing with like a helmet.
Yeah, we talked about that last week. New definition of putting your helmet on. Hey, we've had great discussion on the Facebook page over the last week. Good stuff. We put topics up there throughout the week for you guys to respond to, comment on, videos to watch. Put up a couple of amazing videos and asked, you know, can volleyball be a part of this? And we had some cool responses from guys out there that posted some sweet videos. Sean Rosenthal's big kill, Mike Lambert facialing.
Phil Dahlhauser.
Phil Dahlhauser, thank you. Jeez. You Phil Dahlhauser twice during a match, breaking his glasses. So good stuff on there. And the video that I put up, I thought it's worth a watch. Volleyball fan, not a volleyball fan. There's no volleyball in it, but the video is sick. It's absolutely amazing watching. It's called People Are Awesome, and what people do in that video is astonishing. A couple of things amazed me about that. Number one, there was a guy jumping off a ramp over the fence in his yard and landing his bike in the pool. And he jumps probably 35 feet horizontally, and he's 15 feet in the air at his peak. This is one of those things. There's no
way to
test it. There's no way to test it.
You can't practice it.
No, you line up, and you just go balls out, and you hit the thing, and you hope you make it. You see him pumping in the air, and he actually hits the rear tire on the deck and goes into the pool himself safe, but the bike just gets crushed. It's an amazing piece of video. Then there's also a skier coming out of a half pipe or on some vertical competition, and this skier is like 35 or 40 feet out of the pipe. It's absolutely amazing shot, but there's all
People
kinds of cool
awesome,
soccer
right?
stuff. People Are Awesome, it's called.
People
it's up
awesome.
On the Facebook page. Yep. Really, really neat. I had a great time watching that. Showed it to a few people. But we had some responses about that. You'll see some of those videos there. Some fun stuff from our listeners. So we had a couple of questions out there I thought that were kind of interesting. Facebook page, Jason Hilbert had a couple. Who has the best volleyball tattoos, and what is on Riley's arm?
Wasn't the famous one from Loy when he was like at the 96 Olympics, Anger is a Gift?
You mean the 96 Olympics, the 2000 Olympics,
yeah.
the 2004
But I'm
Olympics,
saying like
yeah.
they featured it. I remember
at
like,
all three of those Olympics.
Did they really?
Oh, God, endlessly. The only time it didn't get featured was 08.
Did you guys heckle him for that ever?
You know,
we
always
used to, when I first.
It was more a subject of bitterness, I think, from other players, like all the attention for the tattoos.
Yeah.
When, at a time when Loy wasn't performing to the extent that everyone thought that attention was deserved. One of the funny things is he didn't really get as much attention in 08, and he played much better. So, And he, we talked to him a little bit about that and kind of the idea of captainship and stuff. But what's on Riley's right arm? It's a devil face, and Riley doesn't know why it's there. It's one of those things we talked to Riley about. It's he got it, but I don't think he would get it again.
Dana Camacho has a tramp stamp.
That's nice. Dana Camacho has a lot of stuff on him, the local beach
guy. There's a lot of tattoos out there. If you walk through a qualifier, you'd be amazed.
But that's just part of how the culture is these days. Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, that's good stuff. And one other question. Did you survive the weekend without the Philadelphia Eagles playing? Yeah, I was much more relaxed. Spent time with the kids.
Isn't it nice? Chargers got a big victory. That made me happy.
Chargers are terrible.
Concur.
Terrible. Although their stats are great.
FireNorv.com starting it today.
Their stats are great, and it's one of those things like volleyball.
Yeah, because they're behind, and you're in a two-minute drill, and you got to, you know.
Yeah, but they're number one in defense, number one in offense. You're number one. You're
not
like number
five.
We are
the worst special teams. We've had five blocks.
Absolutely,
punts.
Including this weekend. But relating that back to volleyball, there's one of those things where in volleyball, you can lose almost every statistical category and still win a match. Seen it happen lots of times.
You can hit 091 and win a match, absolutely.
And if you look right now in the Women's World Championships, Poland, a team that I love, an attractive group of women, unbelievable-looking group of women, famous in their country because not only are they great athletes.
They look nice.
They are beautiful women. They are easy on the eyes. But this is a team I think has tremendous volleyball talent. They absolutely can play with the top teams in the world. They're terrible. I think they're 1-2. But they've outscored their opponents by like 27 points. I have to go back and look it up. Like 27 points. And they still can't get it done. They're killing teams in games where they're not getting it done in crunch time, not winning some of those deuce games. So you see that a lot across volleyball. We'll get back to more of that stuff. There's great action on the Facebook page. Become a fan on Facebook, please. Become a fan on Facebook. Check it out. We post stuff during the week. Lots of fun exchanges between our listeners about volleyball and other times some random stuff. So it's that time once again in the show for the College Volleyball Weekly. And we're just pulling up new music everywhere. Here we go. Florida Gators still on top. In conjunction with the American Volleyball Coaches Association, the Net Live is proud to present each week the College Volleyball Weekly, bringing you the best of what has happened around the world of college volleyball. Love the jog part. Oh, Gators going crazy. Go Gators! Yeah! Oh, that's the best music we've played so far.
That was fantastic.
That's solid.
Probably
love
back
it.
To last Wednesday night.
I love it.
That's where I was, Gainesville.
Well, joining us once again to talk all about women's college is our correspondent, Holly McPeak. Holly, welcome again.
Thank you.
Thanks for making the time to join us here on a beautiful Monday.
So I'm sorry, you're mentioning about the stats. You can beat a team in every statistical category and still lose the match. Well, that's what happened to Washington against UCLA on Friday night. Washington led every category except for two, and that one of them was digs, and the other was service errors.
Holly, how about Jim McLaughlin's Washington squad? They come to Los Angeles, they lose to SC in five and lose to UCLA in five. Where is Washington right now?
Well, rough weekend for them. You know, they were so up and down. They started the first set against USC on Saturday, just dominated. Becky Perry was on fire. Second set, they got crushed. And then third, they got beat again. Fourth, they came back a little. They looked a little bit tired after the UCLA match that went five the night before. But, they need a little bit more offense out of their other middle. And Kinder Carlson, the opposite for Washington, really struggled against USC.
Now, Cal beat Stanford. They are ranked ahead of them. I believe they're in first place alone because Stanford has two losses in the Pac-10. Who, in your opinion, is the best team in the Pac-10, and who do you think will eventually win the conference?
Well, it's definitely between Cal and Stanford, but UCLA is a close third. USC is a close third, UCLA right behind them. USC, very young, very up and down, but they've got so much talent and really getting a lot more offense out of their middles. UCLA is just playing good ball. They're scrapping and beating some good teams, so I've been pretty impressed with them so far.
Yeah.
But I think Cal and Stanford are the top two teams in the Pac-10, you know, separating themselves from everybody else.
If you're Mike Seeley, you have to think successful year already. You've beaten Stanford and you beat Washington. Those are two huge wins for their program. Let's move into the Big 12. I know you did a match last week, Texas at number 10, taking on Nebraska at number 2, and Texas needing a win like that, and they got it in 4 in their home gym.
Wow, it was huge for Texas. Not only did they need that win, but Texas has a very limited roster, and they played against a very deep Nebraska, who no injuries and deep at every position. And so on paper, you're like, wow, how do they match up? But Texas just came out. They served the ball extremely well, blocked the ball well, and it was a great win for Texas. And I think it left Nebraska kind of scratching their head. They can't figure out what's missing, but something is definitely missing at this point for that Nebraska team, although they did win 18 matches in a row prior to that.
Holly, you know who keeps impressing me is Illinois. They had a big win over Michigan. With DeBuehler going out, they're All-American best player. They have Jasmine Orozco now, a freshman outside hitter. They have a freshman libero. But they're 10-1 in the Big Ten and have a shot to finally, you know, take home that title that Penn State has owned for so long.
You're right. Super impressed. They beat Michigan in 5 this week. So they're on top of the Big Ten with Michigan behind them, Penn State in 3rd, and Minnesota behind. You know, I'm impressed that Illinois has been able to play that well, you know, losing their best player and having some young players step in.
You know, I had a chance to see Florida last week, and you have to be impressed with Mary Wise and the Gators. They're 13-0 in the SEC, 20-1 overall. But what's most impressive, Holly, is, you know, they're 9-1 against top 25 teams. So they definitely have earned that number one ranking right now.
Well, yeah, if you look at RPI, Cal probably has had the most difficult schedule, but Florida is a deserved number one right now. I think Cal will move up to number 2 when the AVCA poll comes out. But, you know, Florida has some leadership with their setter and their middle and their outside all being upperclassmen. They're, you know, they're a solid team, and they have the best chance that they've ever had to challenge for a title.
What about Hawaii and where they are right now? They're 20-1. They're not being tested in the WAC. What do you think their chances are moving forward?
Well, I like Hawaii's team. I think they're solid defensively. They're getting great production out of the middle. But I think it's tough when you're not challenged all season long and then you're thrown into the NCAAs against teams that are tested and teams that will push you and teams that will give you different looks. But I asked Coach Shoji, actually, when you and I talked and did that match in Idaho, or wherever we were, New Mexico. And, you know, he says, hey, we push ourselves in practice every day. We've got a mature group. And, you know, I think he has to do that every year. So he's used to that. But I think they're a little bit of a question mark when it comes down to the end of the season.
Holly, I know it's early. There's still a month of volleyball left before we get to the NCAA tournament. But give me your top 4 seeds right now, if you had to.
This is the toughest year to make that prediction ever. But I'm going to go with Florida. I'm going to go with, it's very tough. I don't know. Cal and Stanford. I'm going to put Cal and Stanford together. And then that 4th spot, I'm going to give to Hawaii, just because the rest, everyone's beaten up on each other. And in terms of records, I don't know what's going to happen. I think there's a lot of season to be left. We're only halfway through the conference. Anything can happen. Nebraska and Texas, both big question marks. Penn State still rebuilding. Like I said, anything can happen this year, and I think it makes it more exciting.
Yeah, and there will be a debate in about a month when those seeds come out. Tell us what's going on before you go this weekend in volleyball.
Well, I'm excited because I am covering on Wednesday night at St. Mary's at USD. And then Friday night I have the Bruins, the only team to beat Stanford, at Stanford on Friday night. And then Saturday night, UCLA again at Cal. So Cal will be, in my guess, the number 2 team in the country, the highest seed they've ever been. And I'm looking forward to both those matches.
Holly,
all 3 of them, actually.
Thanks so much for joining us. I love it when you and Geeter just go off on the NCAA because I'm just hanging around watching a little bit.
He checks his text messages. And
you guys are in it.
Fades away. It's beautiful.
Well, in this season, it's so much fun. I'll tell you, when the pairings come out, it's going to be crazy because I don't know how the committee is going to do it.
Hey, you're doing a great job for us, and we really appreciate you making the time to join us each week, Holly. Thanks so much.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
All right. Holly McPeak once again talking all about NCAA college. Heater, get it going again.
Up, up, go, 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 go. Rise, 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 rage, rage. Bring it down, bring it down, bring it down. Go to break.
The Net Live and the ABCA are proud to present the College Volleyball Weekly each week, recapping the action in NCAA volleyball.
Go Gators! Is this the year of the Gators?
I hope they stay
in the country.
I hope they stay number one just so we can keep playing this music. Big finish.
I'm impressed. I'm impressed with the Gators.
That is good stuff. We got to play. I'm impressed with Mary Wise. I'd always heard about her because Harlan Cohen,
she's
an old assistant coach, 68 men's national team coach, helped out when I was at Pepperdine. And he always, every summer, would go down and work with Mary Wise on camps. And he always had such great things to say about Mary. And we used to tease him that Mary was, you know, he was trying to hook up with Mary and, you know, be worming his way into that program and abandoning us. And really, if you look down her resume and what she's done at that school, it's absolutely remarkable.
7 Final Fours. Been in the national championship game once. They lost to SC in 2003. Winningest program since she got there.
900 or something?
1991. They're the winningest program since 1991. So, incredible job. And it was kind of my first time meeting her when I went there last Wednesday. And, you know, she's like one of the deans of our sport. So it was actually really cool to meet her. And, man, they just do a great job there. So they're impressive. They got an athlete named Kelly Murphy, this young woman that is just fantastic. I mean, she does it all. She sets, she hits. Two-time All-American. So this might be her year. Just might be her year.
Florida, keep getting it done so we can keep playing that music. Yep. That's awesome. Hey, another comment from the Facebook page I wanted to bring up. Jeff Twining, again, how about the Motocross the Nations being on one of the big three stations this weekend? Did you see it, Gator? Did you tune in? United States won. Motocross is on TV.
Yeah, I know. I was just too busy.
Oh, I was just trying to click to him and he hung up. My goodness, I've been texting with Reed Pretty from Russia. Must be done with his dinner.
Just like us going to break.
Oh, I don't
click him.
You know, I'm trying to bring him in. I could just play music over him, but we're hoping that he calls in and talks to us a little bit before we get into our crazy discussions here. We still got the 1988 men's gold medal team, Emperor, up or down. Give us a thumb. Hold it sideways, down or up. Are you going to be starter? Are you going to be on the bench? Or are they going to be off the team completely?
We're going to go through each guy, aren't we?
Yeah, we have the whole list. I have to admit, I know more about some guys than I do others. So we'll just have to see how that all turns out. Plus, we need to talk about North Dakota State's coach Eric Hickenstocker resigning midseason under some allegations and some interesting things happening there. We'll get to that in just a moment. We have to say hi to our friend Reed Pretty. Must have finished up his borscht. Reed, how is the food? How is the food at the restaurant?
It was good. It was very good. And I had some nice meat with some potatoes.
This is a restaurant owned by Sergei Tatukin, longtime outside hitter for the Russian national team. And did you have to pay for your meal, or is Tatukin picking up the bill?
I personally didn't. I think the team. I think he paid for the bill last time, and I think the team is paying him back this time.
Piles of ruples everywhere
on the street.
Yeah. Okay. So Reed, you know, there's been a lot of talk recently about organization on the beach. Has there been any progress with the beach players? We know you're good friends with Jason Ring. You're pretty in touch with what's happening over there. What have you heard?
You know, I honestly haven't talked to Jay and the guys and since I've been here in Russia, but I have heard just through the grapevine that the players are more difficult to organize than originally hoped. And that was my fear, just seeing this from afar. And, you know, just like we talked about, we touched on it last week, that really the guys at the top, the men and women at the top, really have nothing to gain as far as they can see from organizing. It's just the sport as a whole and the younger players that have a lot to gain. So, you know, it's my thought to you got to build in this association some payback over time to the guys at the top now. So whatever they may lose in the short term, they would gain in the long term. And that's really something that's built into a lot of different player associations. And if you look at, you know, the NBA Players Association, et cetera, there's retirement packages built in. There's jobs after the fact built in. And so I really hope the players can get on the same page and really see the long term, that no matter what, whether you're at the top of the scale or at the bottom of the scale, to associate is really the best course of action. Have you guys heard anything otherwise?
No, I've heard a lot of different stuff. I haven't talked to too many people specifically, but I think you make a great point about the opportunities afterwards. If you think about opportunities afterwards for beach players, it's about zero. There are no programs to coach. There aren't. You can coach players, but there's not a ton of money in it for the players, much less to kick off to a coach. You're going to have a hard time staying in the sport in any kind of fashion after you're done as a player. You're going to have to go out and get a completely different job. And without building that infrastructure, that legacy, you're really not going to have an opportunity to continue in the sport in any sort of meaningful manner that will produce dollars for a career moving forward. I mean, yeah, if you're Misty or Carey or if you're Phil and Todd, you made enough money, maybe you're done. Maybe you have other options to go indoor, but as far as staying in the beach, it just isn't there. Geeter, have you heard anything from what's been happening? I mean, you're in touch with the beach community. We know you're friends with everybody, real good friends with most of them. What are you hearing from the players about next season?
You know, I've heard a couple different things. I know that USAV is planning on throwing 4 to 5 tournaments. I have heard rumblings that Nick Lewin, because he still does own the AVP, wants to put up 4 tournaments. I don't know how true that is. I don't know what players want to do that. I don't know what players trust it.
He said he was also going to write some checks to keep the tour in business, so he's got a little bit of history to deal with.
Got a little bit of history to deal with. You know, from what I kind of gather, guys, it feels like the players are just in holding, kind of waiting to see who's legit and who's not. I think there are groups that are coming forward and wanting to help, but none have the capital behind them to do it yet. That's my understanding.
Lots of ideas, not a lot of money.
Yeah, I think what those people are trying to do are get these players to sign on and be together, and then we'll go out and try to get the sponsors and try to get this thing going. And I don't know.
So it's sort of the same story. People are just sort of wandering
waiting,
in the wilderness.
Kind of waiting, and it's getting crunch time, I got to tell you. I feel like something has to happen within this month, or else there will be no 2011, at least on the AVP side of things, because you can't plan a tour unless you get going.
So the beach players are like the biblical Jews. They're just wandering the deserts, waiting for the return to the homeland.
And hopefully there's a Moses out there ready to lead because, you know, it would be a crime. I definitely know USAV, though, is planning on having about 4 or 5 events.
All right, Reed, what else you got for us before we kick you off the air at $5 a minute?
Yeah, this is an expensive call. I just wanted to respond to that thought from Geeter. Geeter, you know, I totally get that the players are doing that, that they're trying to wait for it. It's kind of like, if you build it, we will come, but I don't understand why we can't just realize that, you know, the market's going to depict what we are worth as players.
Yep.
But there, one thing's for sure, we're worth way more together.
Oh, there's
players
no doubt.
Players are going to be worth way more sticking together. And I feel like instead of waiting for some entity to come in and promise the world, why don't we just band together as the players and just say, look, you know, we're going to be better together than we are apart. Let's not wait for somebody to talk me into this tour or that organization.
Well, you know, Reed, I hadn't heard that it was hard getting these guys together. I had kind of been hearing that's what was going to happen, and I just assumed everyone was jumping on board. So I did not know that until you said that. I thought the players were kind of banding together, but were waiting to see what group was going to come forward that was actually legit. But I didn't know it was tough to get the players together.
Yeah, again, you know, I'm like 6,000 miles apart, so, you know, my information.
I think there's something to be said about people being at the different economic levels in the top, having different needs than the bottom. And I think that's always been a problem. But I agree. I think now is the best time to get it together.
The top has to realize it's in the best interest of their sport. It's in the best interest of themselves long term to give up a little now.
Well, we need to get some of the top on here so we can see what their take is on this.
We'll do it. All right, Reader. Thanks for checking in, dude.
No problem. Yeah, we're just in Belgrade. A quick update from here. Yeah, we're just on a 3-city tour, and we just had like dinner at Sergei Tatukin's place. This is his city. There's a statue of him and Chapulin and Humutsky out in front of the park here. So he's got the keys of the city, to say the least.
How does Hamutsky's beard look in that statue? Does Hamutsky's beard look as awesome as it did in person?
I think it was in their younger days when they were winning like 3 Champions League titles in a row. We won last night at 5 and just working things out. And you know, this team, I said it to you off the air. I'm going to go ahead and say it on the air. This is the most professional team I have ever played for. The way they do business, there's no mistake about why they have had the success that they've had. So it's a real joy to be with this team and with this group.
Awesome, awesome. Well, we'll look forward to hearing more when you're back at your homestead and got the mic ready and here to join us for a couple of hours.
Right on. We'll talk to you guys next week.
All right. Thanks, Reed. Reed Pretty, direct from Belgrade, Russia. Place you don't want to go, really. I mean, Belgrade, I've seen lots of pictures.
I'm going to Hawaii.
That's a little better than Belgrade. It's not quite on the same level.
I'm telling you right now, I've got to get down to business this week and figure out what is going on.
At the beach.
Yeah, I just want to see what some of the top players are saying, and I think we need to get like a Todd Rogers on here. And
yeah, we'll get him.
Because I think
talk
we're all just hearing things. You know,
talk to him.
Things,
we'll bring him
things.
In here because I want to know more about the PBVA.
Yes.
I want to hear more about that player's organization that has kind of developed.
Bowling,
I hear a lot of people.
You say that to me.
So do I.
I know.
There's too many acronyms. There's been so many acronyms in the sport of volleyball. AVP, BVA, CBVA, PBVA. Stop with the acronyms. Maybe just call it volleyball. The club.
The club.
All right. Let's get to this discussion now. I want to go to the discussion about North Dakota State. Coach Eric Hinterstock.
Yes.
He resigned midseason under reports of verbal abuse of players, that he was warned more than a year ago about his verbal abuse with the players. He's had an excellent record with the team. His team has been winning, including this year. They've had excellent results. But there's a 15-minute press conference with the athletic director of North Dakota State talking about the firing, talking about kind of the process of coping for the players and what's going forward. Obviously, a big change right in the middle of the season. And I don't know. I mean, he resigned. He was not fired. He resigned. And under the guise of, it's taken over my life too much, I have to take a step back. So it seems like he was a little bit emotionally out of control in not only his volleyball practices, his volleyball matches, but maybe in his own personal life.
Who knows what's going on? I mean, that's the thing we don't know when
we
these
don't.
Things happen. Obviously, something. You know, there was a letter written to him. There were things that, you know, from the AD. And you need to... you know, obviously it was documented, and for him to get fired mid-season.
Oh, resigned.
Resigned.
Resigned, right, but under duress.
Under duress.
One of these, like, yeah, you resigned.
I should not be fired. I take that back, obviously. You'd think fired, but he resigned.
He resigned.
There's always more there.
Well, one of the things that was mentioned in some of this stuff was swearing at players.
Yeah.
And also grabbing of players' jerseys.
I think the hands-on thing, the grabbing, the physicality of that, the image of that people get in their heads, whether you're, I mean, think about it, you're a parent, that would bother me.
See,
I mean, I don't know, in football, like, you know, you see his grab,
yeah.
That doesn't bother me, but I think a male coach grabbing a female player,
right.
That.
I mean, there's issues like my boys, like at some point, the only thing you can do is pick them up and move them out of the room because they're just so out of control and focused or upset about something. The only thing I can do is grab them by the arm and escort them out of the room or the situation. And there's just that part that goes on. But I think it is different when you have a male coach and female players.
Yeah.
And swearing, I mean, is swearing at your players okay at any point? We're talking about college athletes who obviously use profanity themselves in situations.
I'd have been fired a long time ago. And I'm just saying that because I've used bad language. I've used bad language when I've coached younger kids, and I do feel bad. I mean, when I used to coach boys' hoops, I mean, those things flew out. You know, and when I coach the girls. But I do try to – it has gotten better over the last few years. I've definitely made a conscious effort about it as I've gotten older. There's no question about it. And, you know, in terms of, like, grabbing an arm or really getting mad at someone and maybe grabbing their shoulders, I think if it happens once, twice, you get warned about it. But there must be something where it's happening and it's got a little more physical than – it's different than just grabbing an arm on your setter and going, what are you setting? You know what I'm saying?
I think it's the context of it, too. And one of the questions I had was, is that abuse to the players? But I think it's context. Like, when I'm coaching youth football, I have eight-year-olds, and my son gets treated differently than everybody else. But I'll at times put my hand on somebody or give somebody a little pat. You know, you got to quiet down. Or I'll grab them by the shoulders and be talking to them. But the conversation ends with a pat on the back or, you know, you can do it. Here we go. I think there's a lot of context in there, and it seems like this was a little bit out of control. The image I always have when I think about grabbing players is Lou Holtz, grabbing the guy by the face mask.
I think what this might have to do with also is the verbal part of it, and maybe it's not so much swearing, but maybe the verbal abuse that he gave during practice. And I'm just saying
– it doesn't have to be swearing to be abused.
Yeah, and that's where I've had kids, and I'm not going to say the university, but I've had a kid leave recently who – I mean, things that – and there's always two sides to every story, but the things that she has told me, that the coach said to her, you think, how's this guy have a job? You know? And I think when it gets to that kind of damage is worse than the grabbing of the arm worse than, you know, the physical part of it, unless it's a serious physical.
Well, there's so many issues associated with women's athletics right now, especially USA Swimming suffering so much with the sex scandals and sexual abuse claims. Obviously, that is no way indicated in this situation.
Absolutely.
There's no discussion of that. But that whole line of where is it for players? And when I was thinking about that, for college level, Geeter, where is the line between pushing too much and pushing too little? Because this is something coaches have to fight all the time.
Yeah.
How far can I push my players to get better performance out of them is sometimes a fine line between getting that fine performance and pushing them over and getting poorer performance.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think part of being a great coach is knowing when to push buttons and knowing when you can motivate your team and how to motivate your team. You know, I mean, Bobby Knight, the days of Bobby Knight, oh, man, you imagine if they're – I mean, Bobby Knight got in trouble when SportsCenter started getting big. And
right.
Twitter and all
when
these
somebody
things.
Put a camera in the heating duct in the gym. Yeah.
I mean, you don't think he was doing that his whole career?
Absolutely.
But it was
you
know, people didn't really care.
A different era, though. You were allowed to do that back then.
But I think with a male coach and female players, putting your hands on them, any kind of physicality, you're crossing the line.
At all.
I think it's different if you're kind of like hands on, hey, you know, and you're bringing them in and you're like, hey, listen.
It's all contextual,
Totally, you know what I mean? But if you're physically, like, if you're pissed at them and you're grabbing them and yanking them over, you know.
It's an issue of self-control for the coach, I think. Yeah. It's not an issue for the other players.
You hit on something earlier, though, that you never know what's going on in these coaches' lives. I mean, there could be some other issues that are, you know, and that's why maybe they had to resign as well. You know, we don't know the whole story.
But it all spirals together.
Sure.
The indication from him was that volleyball was eating up his entire life and really setting up bad situations for him personally is what the gist of it was for me. And in dealing with juniors, you coach juniors.
Yep.
I think you had a recent national championship.
Yep.
Did you win something recently?
Yeah, gold.
Oh, gold. That's what it was.
Okay.
I couldn't remember. You mentioned it once.
Yeah.
Do you see some juniors coaches doing similar things, grabbing players or acting in a manner you think is inappropriate? How common is this? Because my perception of some of the stuff that goes on with female athletes for a long time in just what I hear about, whether it's weight control or control of their schedule, that some of these coaches are pretty crazy when it comes to controlling their players on and off the court.
There's no doubt. I don't see it as much in SoCal. I've been around a lot of the coaches, and we've been around each other for a long time. And there are definitely different styles of coaching. But I think the ones that I coach against, I don't see the verbal abuse. I've never seen the physical part of it. You hear of stuff around the country. You hear of clubs around the country. You may go to a JOs or a qualifier and see a team and go, that's interesting, or see a coach and go, wow, that guy's out of control, you know, the swearing and the, you know, but then you look 10 feet away and the parents are sitting right there hearing it.
Here's the other side of it for me that's unfortunate is when I run volleyball camps, I run them all over the nation for youth girls, the fact that I would never touch anyone in an inappropriate manner, but yet these girls give you hugs, they give you fives, you bump into them. I mean, you're in a gym together for a long time, and the fact that I have that thought of, like, how can any of my actions be misconstrued? Doesn't matter what my actions are. They can just be misconstrued, and I can be sued for with basically no basis at all.
Yeah.
But the fact that that enters my mind while I'm in the gym coaching, doing something that should be an incredibly positive experience for the kids and for me, that enters my mind bothers me, that's where our society has gone.
Sure.
I just don't like that. On a personal level, I don't like that complicating it because I then have to pay basically a mental price for all the idiots out there who are sleeping with players, touching players inappropriately, and causing problems.
Yeah, and, you know, I always go back to this. This guy named Paul Muff, he passed away in 1994, but he was a longtime basketball coach at my high school. And every kid, you just knew that if you're going to go to that high school, you're going to play for Paul Muff. He was this, like, nice, mild-mannered man. I mean, he knew my family. When I finally got into the gym my sophomore year, we were scrimmaging against the varsity, and I heard him drop an F-bomb for the first time. It scared. I could not believe it. And then I ended up playing for him for 2 years, and you heard him a lot more often. But he didn't overuse them, but when he used them, it actually meant something. Because
right.
I think if there's a coach out there that just F-bombs all the time and cusses all the time, it's probably in one ear and out the other. You know, I've coached with somebody before, and, you know, we've asked kids before, like, hey, you know, if a bad word comes out, because this is an intense game, will it offend you? And if it does, I will try my best to not do it. If it doesn't and it slips, I'll always say I'm sorry about that. But sometimes, man, it flies out.
It's like parenting.
Yeah, it is.
Having a team is very much like parenting, and you wonder if you use this tool too much, does it become ineffective when you talk about the swearing? It doesn't. It's not shocking. If you use it once in a while, yeah, it's shocking. But if you use it all the time, it's systematic desensitization. Whatever, I don't care anymore as a player. In parenting, the same exact thing happens. And unfortunately, today, in today's sports climate, you can't make a mistake once or twice. Sometimes if it gets caught on SportsCenter, you're done.
And, you know, someone makes a great point here. There's a difference between swearing and swearing at a player.
Yeah, swearing in frustration.
Like
that's a good point.
I swear in frustration or swear to make a point more than I don't swear at a player. Never, I've never gone, you, ever.
Yeah.
That, I think, maybe that's what this situation was at North Dakota State. I don't know. That's a different ball game. I really think so.
If it's directed at a player personally rather than at the situation.
You beep an idiot.
Listen, the stock footage they showed during this interview, the guy's a little animated, and you know they were looking for footage that was not going to put the university or that coach in a bad light during that press conference. So that's probably the best of some of that footage. There's got to be some worse footage out there. So if one of our listeners has some information, was familiar with the situation, we'd love to hear your comment on it.
Sure.
You can email us, thenetlive@gmail.com, or post on our Facebook page, The Net Live on Facebook. But an interesting discussion, I think, that leads to a greater thing about male and female coaches.
Absolutely.
And just coaching in general. Yeah. You talk about the Bobby Knight idea. There's a very interesting part of Sacred Hoops, book by Phil Jackson.
Absolutely.
Great book.
Great book.
Great book. Many years old now. I read it a long time ago. I reread it during the 2004 lead up to the games. I took it with me on the trip as we left before the 2004 games. It's a great read. But Phil Jackson talks about he and another coach going to a Bobby Knight coaching clinic. And the way that he conducted it, Phil Jackson and his friend ended up skipping the rest of the clinic. Said, forget it. This guy, you know, the way he's treating people, the information he's giving us in this clinic is worthless. Worthless to the way that Phil wanted to conduct himself.
Yeah.
And obviously he is the most successful coach in the history of basketball, maybe sports. So you have to think that's probably the better way to do things, is more emulate Phil than emulate Bobby Knight. All right. I don't even want to take a break, Geeter. We only have 17 minutes left for this discussion. We have to get through this. This is your chance, my chance right now. Up or down, you're the emperor. You got the thumb sideways. Maybe it's going to go up. Maybe it's going to go down. We're going to go through the 1988 gold medal team roster and let you know, do we think they're going to be a starter? They're going to be a bench player? Maybe they'll be in the gym, or are they cut entirely? So, starting with number one, just no particular order off the Wikipedia list, Troy Tanner.
I'll go first.
Okay.
Troy Tanner on the team, role player, solid guy, people liked him. Need those guys on the team to win gold. Good volleyball mind.
So the question, would he be on the team today?
Yes.
The men's team today?
Yes, good role player, backup.
Okay. I'm with you on this with Troy Tanner. I think he's a guy who, you put him in the group, and the group functions better. Whether he's on the floor, you know, I don't know. He's a good player. I think he'd be in the gym competing. Whether he travels or not, that's going to be a question of the event, of the up and down of things. But I think he's one of those guys, you have him in your gym every day.
Sure.
It's a positive. I'm with you on that one. All right, Dave Saunders.
I don't see a spot for him. Because I just think at that position, guys are there's just too many guys that are more physical and just...
What position?
Outside hitter.
Okay.
And just better.
So cut. You cut him.
He's in the gym.
Where? Calling lines?
Tyler Hildebrand's in the gym, right? isn't there guys in the gym?
There's 24 guys, more or less.
He's in the gym.
He's in the gym. Okay.
No doubt about it.
Okay.
He's not cut. He's not traveling to the Olympics.
Okay.
He's not going to London.
So he's one of those guys that helped prepare the team, but he's not going to be on the roster. All right. No spot for Dave Saunders. I'm with you on that only because I don't know Dave Saunders all that well. I'll have to just go with your judgment. Jonathan Root.
Don't think I know it well enough to... I mean, I know the Roots were great players. There's a family of them, and I know he's a great player, but I don't know if he's on the 12-man roster because I don't know enough about him as a player. You?
I don't. Not one of the big names.
Yeah.
Not one of the guys you think of. So a little bit of a
pass.
I
knew he was on that team. But
we need a pass. We got to pass.
We got to be fair to him.
Yeah, we have to. I don't want to kill the guy, and I wasn't there, and I've never seen him play. Okay, Jonathan Root pass. Now here we go. Bob Stavertlik, starter, gold medalist, bronze medalist in 1992. Bob Stavertlik, today's program.
He is on the team. He is a contributor.
Okay. Is he playing libero?
He is so good at passing. Remember, everyone served him because Karch was the best passer in the world. But guess who passed the better percentage? Stavertlik.
Okay. So?
He's on the team.
He's on the team. Is he traveling?
And when Reed panics and gets yanked, Stavertlik's coming in.
Okay. So you've got Stavertlik at outside hitter. You've got Reed at outside hitter. So you're taking out Rooney or Anderson for Stavertlik.
I'm just saying, Stavertlik is that guy that can just settle your squad down, bud. He's going to settle.
What about at the net? Can he play at the net? I mean, this is a guy who back in those times, the early 90s, late 80s, had to tool the block back then. Now the block's bigger.
Underneath,
the athletes are stronger.
Underneath chizzies, he just have to do it.
How many waterfall balls can he generate against Russia?
Not a lot, I don't think. Stavertlik is on the team.
Okay,
it's blasphemous for me to say that. I mean,
I'm putting Stavertlik.
One of the best passers of all time.
I'm putting him in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe in a combination of players, he ends up on a trip.
Okay.
Because we're not talking about the Olympics yet.
Okay.
Maybe he goes on a World League weekend or two. I don't know. He's at a disadvantage with his play at the net. With the way the game has gone, with the emphasis of the play at the net and the service game from the service line, I don't see Stavertlik having the arm, having the physicality to be 100% on the roster all the time. So he's in the gym. He's competing for a spot in the gym. But maybe here, maybe there.
Gotcha.
Okay. Doug Partee.
On the team.
He's a middle. Okay.
So
David Lee, Ryan Millar.
You're going to have Craig Buck coming up here.
Yeah.
Max Holt.
And Russell
Partee.
Holmes.
Partee, though.
Come on.
He could slice and dice. He could roof.
Partee, for me, I don't think he starts. He travels. He's absolutely on the travel squad.
Has to be.
Yeah. He's on the travel squad for me. He's traveling. Because I think he's that good. But I have a hard time starting him over Millar or Lee right now. And maybe it's just because that's my contemporaries.
When you look at Lee, you go, how in the world? I mean, he's huge. He's physical. He's a monster.
He's not that tall, though.
Look at Millar and the experience.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you going to bench Ryan Millar?
And the ability
Millar?
To side out. The
it's
ability
tough.
To side out. Yeah. So Partee for me, he's traveling. He's going to replace one of the young guys. You're going to carry him on the roster for sure.
How many middles are we taking?
Four.
Okay.
Four middles. Because it's a 14-person roster. So we've got a little bit of room now.
Okay, good.
Okay. Next guy, Steve Timmons. The old flat top.
I'm starting Big Red at the opposite spot. We named
over Clay Stanley.
We named a set after him. Red. I mean, the Red. Who do you think that's named after?
Some guy with red hair?
Steve Timmons. I'm telling you, rock star. I was there in the 80s. I remember going to some events. He transcended the game. I mean, he was a star, and he was also good. He hit a high clip. He had shots.
Here's what I like about Timmons.
We need personality on this team.
I love the speed. I love the speed of the set to him on the backside. I think it changes the game on the left side of the court. I think he's hitting on the right. It changes the game for the left side hitter. I think he starts over Clay Stanley. Right
and that's going to hurt because Clay's...
I love Clay.
Clay's a bro. But
I love Clay, but I think Steve...
I love Big Red.
...affects the game in a way that Clay doesn't. Clay has a much slower ball, a much heavier swing. You know, you can still sub Clay into serve. I think Timmons...
Exactly.
I'm starting Timmons.
Clay's going to do some things for us from the service line. Clay's going to learn for him, and then Clay's going to start at the next Olympics.
Okay. So Steve Timmons still starts even in today's game. He was a prototype, perhaps ahead of his time. Okay. Craig Buck.
Buck thinks he's starting.
Middle blocker.
Craig Buck thinks he's starting on this team.
He thinks he's starting today.
He thinks he's starting
Actual
on this
Craig
team.
Actual Craig Buck, 56 years old, thinks he's starting
today.
He's
not starting on this team.
No.
Okay? And I'm
going
to have a conversation with him. I'm going to say, listen, Dave, Lee, and Millar are my middles. I'm taking Partee. You can be in a battle, and you can get some time. You could be our fourth middle. Can you accept this role, Craig? And if you can't, you're gone. And I'm talking about one of the best middle blockers of all time, Craig Buck.
I love it.
One
you
of the best middles
for
of
him.
All time. I want his
you're
attitude.
Gone.
I want his attitude better because Right now, I want to see how bad he wants to be.
Got
to
be
team.
A team guy.
I want to see if he wants to be a team guy. Do I think Craig Buck could start? Yeah.
Okay.
When we get into the gym, we work.
He's not that powerful, though.
I know. I'm just saying. Could he? Yeah. But I want to know what he's going to do with this team. What his attitude is going to be. Okay. Because physically, and because he's Craig Buck, he deserves to be on that team.
He's an odd dude, though. Met Craig a couple times.
He's a rare bird.
He is. He's his own man.
Yeah. No question about it.
So, yeah. Team-wise, it's a question. But he's traveling for you. He's traveling. You're taking Buck? Or is he competing for that spot with a younger guy? For me, I think he's on the cusp of traveling, but you're maybe taking a younger guy who's more of a team guy. You're taking a Holt. You're taking a Holmes because you're building those guys up, and they're not going to give you lip.
It all depends when you and I go into that room with the other coaches that we've assembled around us,
mm-hmm.
and we have our meeting. What did we all take away from our conversation with Craig Buck? Is he ready to be on this team?
Is he dropping too many F-bombs?
Is he going to bring us down, or is he bringing us up? Because right now, Holmes and Holt are out.
All right, so we need to have a conversation with Craig Buck to decide if he wants to be in our gym or not.
Absolutely.
Okay, all right. Scott Fortune.
Bones. Put away the gold medal ball.
It's not too bad.
On overpass.
Looks good on a resume.
Was a god. Where does he fit?
He's real lean, thin, kind of whippy. Passes pretty well, right?
You and I, friends with Riley. I mean, this is who Bones is going to be going after right here.
I think he's sort of a shorter Sean Rooney.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got some heat occasionally, not a ton all the time. I like his fire.
Yep.
I got to put him on my team. I got to carry him. I'll probably carry him over a guy like Riley. I'll carry because I think he can pass to a level that you can replace a guy like mm-hmm. Riley. He's taller. He's got a little bit more of an arm. I think he's more scary from the service line.
You know what's great about this debate
game?
Is you think to yourself, he's won a gold. Doesn't he go, you know what? So is Riley.
Yeah, exactly. Riley's a gold medalist.
You can't use that argument anymore.
No.
I mean, Lamborn's won a gold as a libero.
Absolutely.
So you can't say he wouldn't be the libero.
And it's not about that. It's about the physical talent. How has the game changed, and do these guys translate? Like a Timmons. Hey, he's got the physical stature to be in today's game.
Bones is on the team.
I think Bones is still there.
I think he's on the
team. He's traveling for me.
He's on the team.
Okay, Ricky Lutes. At the setter position, Ricky Lutes. Back up.
Here's my problem.
Okay.
Here's my problem. Ricky's in the gym. He's my baby Jesus now. Isn't Tyler Hildebrand the third setter right now?
Yeah.
He's my little baby Jesus.
Did Lutes have long hair like baby
Jesus? No.
Okay.
Man, could that guy. I mean, the ladies loved him. Men wanted to be him. Ricky Lutes, a god, a four-time national champion. But here's the deal. The two best setters that we've had over the course of the last 37 Olympics, because these two guys have played in all of them. Loy has, what, 7 Olympics under his belt, and Stork played in 15 of them? I mean, these guys have been around forever. Stork and Loy Ball have to be your setters. They're the two best. They're the two best we've had. You got to go with them. That makes Ricky the third. You only travel two, I believe.
But Loy's not on the team right now. You have to put him on today's team. I am not coming back.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No.
I was thinking Loy because of the Olympics.
No Loy.
You know what? Winder, physical talent, great. Hansen, great kid. Been around now for a while. Has a gold as a backup. I'm going with Ricky Lutes. More physical.
There's a lot of upheaval at the setter position. We're going to come to Stork next. I think Lutes is absolutely traveling.
Yeah.
I think he's better than who we have now. I think
and for what
the
he can bring
position
off
is a
the
question.
Court to that team.
Yeah.
In terms of ladies coming around and just cheering for you.
The handsome men's club?
The handsome men's club.
He is a member of the handsome men's club.
He's a member of the handsome men's club. No, but he's, and a great guy. People love playing with him, for him.
All right.
Without a question, Stork, though, is the starter.
All right, Lutes on the team.
Mm-hmm.
Lutes is on the team. And now Jeff Stork. He had an okay career. Left-handed.
Yeah, left-handed. Had a
bronze, gold.
Still has one of the great overpass snaps of all time. I think I've seen it on YouTube years ago.
Put on a couple of pounds since then.
Yeah.
But we're talking about back then, transferred to today.
Yep.
Lean, mean,
yep.
Jeff Stork, with all the attitude, the angry, Pepperdine guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's starting for me.
Yep.
He's starting. Starter today. Put him in the gym. It's over. The conversation's over.
Over.
Nobody else gets in that
That's
position.
It.
Unless you try and bring Loy back. He's not
no.
coming back. All right. Eric Sato.
The soggy dog. Eric Sato, pound for pound, one of the great volleyball players in our country. If you guys have never played against him or seen him at a six-man or had any kind of fun with him at the U.S. Nationals that we used to play and all that stuff, this guy did things on the volleyball court that no one ever did. He would be like,
absolutely.
He would, you know, it's like
Spud Webb
in a dunk contest. You know what I mean? Like when we did stuff you had never seen. When guys,
monster
jumper. When Dr. J first went from the free throw line, when Jordan first came out, I'm telling you guys, Sato did things. I did volleyball camps with him. He's incredible. Find a way, get him on this team. And defensively, if there was a libero role back then, who would have been better than him?
I think he's a libero. I think he's a libero. I wonder about his passing because he's known for his serving, right?
Yeah.
He come in and play defense.
Oh, bomb a jumpy.
But defense and passing are two different animals.
Sure.
And we've seen that with libero players, that you've had a great passer. Mm-hmm. Eric Sullivan, great passer, not a great defender.
Yeah.
Rich Lamborn, when he came to the team, a much better defender than he was a passer.
Sure.
He had to learn how to be a passer.
Sure.
So I think for me, Sato's kind of a tweener guy. His skills don't translate to today's game because – not to diminish his skills, but you can't serve as a libero outside of NCAA women's.
And do you have a DS on this team? Do you do that role because isn't that Stavertlich?
Isn't
that Stavertlich?
I can't give up a roster position offensively to do that. In the women's you can. We've seen Nicole Davis and Stacey Sakura do it where you've given up a roster position offensively to have more defense with two defensive players. You don't have a lot of subs, so I don't think Sato's in there.
He's in the gym.
Maybe to try and train as a libero, I'd have to assess him passing.
Put him in the gym.
I mean,
he might lose your job. Put him in the gym.
Oh, I'd probably have him in the gym. I have a hard time seeing him make a roster.
Okay.
Maybe he's there as a training guy, but I have a hard time seeing Sato make a roster. He's just a tweener.
Never thought I'd heard that.
The
Sato
game changes
is just a
that
training
way.
Guy. I know.
He's a competitor. I like that about him. So I like his gym presence. Where Buck, you have a question about his gym presence? Sato, I like his gym presence.
Charles.
All right, Charles, the last one.
Karchi.
Karch Karai. We've got 3 minutes to go on the show.
Karch Karai.
Karch Karai. Tell me.
Don't look at me like that.
We had a little discussion about this before the air.
He starts.
Really?
Karch Karai. Starts.
Starts. Who are you putting on the bench?
I don't care. Karch starts. Reed and Karch.
Really?
I don't care.
Reed and Karch, you're going awfully small.
Two midgets out there, we win.
Wow.
They've all won.
Starter.
Riley won. Reed won.
Yeah.
Karch won.
Riley won. It's
twice.
True.
Stavertlich won.
All right. Is
Karch,
Karch?
Karai, 148 titles, 3 golds, 2 indoor, 1 outdoor. He starts.
Now, we've talked
his
about the
will,
physicality.
His will, his
Wait.
Work ethic. His ability to win.
How tall is Karch?
This guy can pass, he can hit, he can block, he can do it all.
How
Karch
tall is he?
Karai.
How tall is he?
6'4"?
Maybe?
6'4".
4? Okay.
6'4".
Jumps well, right? 40?
Well, you're talking about at 50 years old? I mean,
no, not today.
Oh, thank
no,
you.
No, Karch has been. Karch has been today.
Karch could jump.
40?
Karch could jump. 40, fine.
Okay, what about his arm? We know he can get it done on the beach.
Dude.
What about his arm indoors?
Because
I've talked to a lot of people who played back then. A lot of people played back then said, couldn't hit the ball all that hard. Not that great at the net.
A triple-digit fastball. He didn't have a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. But
The block is bigger today.
He hit incredible angles, incredible court vision.
Okay.
The best of all time.
Defenses are better. Block is bigger. You can cut the ball around all you want. We've seen lots of players go to the national team, cut the ball around. Doesn't do anything. Scott Wong.
You know what he would do? Hi, Chizzy! Off the tips and into the crowd.
So you think he's thinking it. One of the smartest guys ever in the sport. You think he's without a doubt,
he is on the team and he's starting.
Wow, he's starting. Wow.
What are you going to tell me? He's in the gym?
He's definitely in the gym.
Karch Karai, you're allowing
him
in the
gym. He's in the gym. I'm allowing him in the gym. This is my gym now. I'm running the gym. He's in the gym. I think Karch is competing for a spot. I don't think he's starting. I think he's absolutely competing for a spot. But there's a lot of guys at that outside hitter position that I have to look at Karch, and it's a little bit of a Riley Salmon situation.
Sure.
I look at Karch and go, okay, he jumps pretty well.
Uh-huh.
He's a little bit undersized.
Uh-huh.
I wonder how he's going to block, and he doesn't have that great arm at the net. And serving-wise, what's he going to do for me from the service line in a modern game that's based all around serving?
Is Reed starting?
Is he going to beat the ball to death? Reed can beat the ball from the service line.
So he's starting.
Reed can beat the ball in a good side-out situation. Reed, I've told him, he doesn't like it. High balls are my questions with him. So, Karch, he's competing for a spot.
Karch and Reed are going at it for that spot.
There you go. That's the way it is.
So you're saying the race at that outside spot is Rooney, Anderson, Riley,
Karch,
Reed, Stavertlich.
There you go.
Are your 6 outsides.
There you go. Hey.
I'm sorry for all the rest of the guys. Did you cut?
That's it.
I mean, you're not even in
the
team anymore.
We're going to do this again for other teams. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this has been The Net Live here on TheVolleyballNetwork.com. We appreciate you tuning in. I'm trying to get the outro music to go, but it just won't go. I'll have to lay it over later.
People
Gita, we're out of here.
Crazy. You thought it was
seconds.
A gym, dude.
We're going to do it again. Send us your messages to netlive@gmail.com. Let us know on Facebook. We're out. See ya.